Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 98. And this week's episode is brought to you by Havoc. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Glenn.
Action by Havoc. The new scent out now.
I should have said Sean Heart Attack Collins.
How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Have a good weekend?
Yes, indeed.
What'd you do?
We watched Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast was this week
for our Disney movie night. I didn't write down my notes this week.
Which I was looking through your pictures and I'm like, I got to the food. I'm like, this does not make sense. And then Sarah
put in there.
And
Sarah, you didn't look at the description.
I didn't read the description. Sarah comes along and goes, oh well, it's French bread pizza, French bread. I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
We were gonna do French toast too, but. Caitlin decided she didn't want any, and she's the only one that eats it. So, but yeah, we had French onion dip, French bread pizza. I don't like it. And Hollywood would have eaten it, but
you know what's best?
She had enough.
That raisin swirl bread, make that French bread, French toast.
Yeah, if you pluck the raisins out of it, it'd be
no,
great.
The raisins are great.
French bread pizza,
yes, French
but
not
dip
my bread,
French onion dip, French bread. Itself, and what was the other thing? French fries.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was genius.
They don't like French cuisine, so that's what we're with. French.
Well, you know.
I don't know that many people who like French cuisine, honestly.
There's some French cuisine I like.
I've taken a whole semester of French, and I can guarantee you at this point we haven't covered any.
Considering all the French things I can think of are American.
Yeah. But earlier in the week.
Fishy soie, that's got to be French, doesn't it?
What?
Fishy soie.
I've never had that.
It's cold soup.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's what he says in Batman.
It's not very good.
The soup
either.
Is cold. It's fishy soie. It's supposed to be cold.
Yeah.
I had that actually once at a friend's.
It's not good.
It's not. Well, here's the thing. We were at a friend's wedding reception.
Varieties?
And they put this thing down in front of me. It was this bold green. And I was like, okay, but I'll try anything.
Well,
like
it's not even green green. It's like a lime. Or not a lime green.
Like lime green would be
it's
worse.
It's like a pea green.
It's like a mint green.
Yeah, mint green. There you go.
It was a real life.
I'd be more tempted if it was like forest green.
I'll try anything once. So I dipped into it expecting. Consistency of soup, right? So it's got to be soup. Cold, ice cold. Now, it had actually pretty good flavor, but I couldn't get past the cold. And I kept wanting. I mean, this was one of these real swanky. They spent a lot of money on this wedding reception. And I kept looking around, and I thought, how poor form is it if I grab a guy in a tuxedo and say, can you put this in the microwave? Because it would be awesome if he heated it up. It was not, no, I wasn't happy. My taste buds were not happy.
But earlier in the week, and Keith can attest to this, we had our election day coverage at work,
which yeah,
we can't
day.
Talk too much about because we can't talk about work anymore. But that was kind of a headache, but it all came through okay, so.
Yeah, it worked out.
At least you guys got to go home knowing that it was over.
That's true.
For the most
That's
part.
True. Yeah. Yeah. This was one of those years
and
where
didn't
they
have to stay late.
Plenty early enough.
Well,
so.
I had to stay late. You didn't have to stay
you
late.
You didn't stay too late, though. You were
I stayed about
hour.
An hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did stay late because I did web
it's
stuff.
It's later than I stayed for the primary.
I did web stuff because
yeah.
Nate had me put the one story up before because we didn't have anything on there. And then I put a couple of stories up afterwards. So.
We had results. That's all people cared about. Mm-hmm.
Feeding the dragon.
That was it. I didn't do anything else big this week. We had Friday Night Who, of course, on Friday, which was a lot of fun. And that's pretty much it. Today yesterday I cleaned out the gutters before the rain came.
Oh.
Boy, was I excited. I got up because I've been putting this off. I hate cleaning the gutters. Man, I hate it because I have a 2-story house and you have to climb up on a ladder. And I usually walk around on the roof and use the leaf blower and just run, you know, walk along the side.
Yeah,
blow them out of there. But yesterday was super windy, and so I was leery about getting up there. Well, here's the thing. I've been putting it off because I usually try to wait till all my leaves come down for my tree.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Because here's the thing. If you clean them out before all the leaves come down, what happens? There's room for more leaves.
And then you
at least if you don't – yeah, if you leave it until all the leaves come down, there's only so many can you know, congregate in there. So nothing else can drop in there once you get to a certain point.
They kind of
skitter
off.
Now – I don't have all my leaves. Most of them came off, though, with the wind yesterday. But anyway.
So there shouldn't be many.
So I'm going up and down the ladder in the front of the house. Because, like I say, I usually get up on the roof, walk around, blow them off. But I'm going up and down the ladder because I'm thinking it's probably way too windy for me to be on the roof. And so I'm just going up and down the ladder. And I got about two-thirds across the front of the house. And I was like, to heck with this. I crawled all the way up and then walked all around. Luckily, I had enough extension cord with my leaf blower. But so I walked all around the house, got it done, went down. Then, of course, there's all the leaves in the yard, which I felt kind of bad because the neighbor lady, she had like a crew come and clean her yard, like rake her leaves out of her yard and everything.
And you blew a bunch of leaves.
And then I blew leaves off the top of my roof into her yard. Most of them went into my backyard, which I don't care so much about. But anyway, so and then I get down, and of course we've got all the leaves in the yard now because so we had to get those up. But once I got all that up, I was good. But that was just it. I would have probably waited even one more week because even though it's supposed to be cold next weekend, although now I'm seeing that it's not, but even though we were expecting it to be cold again next weekend, I'm thinking, well, most of the leaves will be down by then. However, we had this big rain chance, and I thought, you know what? First of all, if it rains heavy enough and my gutters aren't running, then I start getting flooding in my basement. So I wasn't going to have that, which is ironic that clogged gutters cause. But you know what happens is all of it comes down in one spot, and then it sits there next to your foundation, and it gets down in your basement anyway. So that's why
they would invent something that would channel the water off the roof and away from the house.
Yeah, well, it's called gutters. And
if only they had also invented something to cover the gutters allowed rain in.
Guess what? I have looked at investing. They're very, very,
I'm
very
sure they
expensive.
Are.
In fact, I'm hoping we get a hailstorm soon so that I can then, because my roof is probably close to needing, but it didn't get enough damage the last time. So I'm hoping just to push it just enough so that the insurance will pay for it, because they'll pay for the roof and the gutters at the same time. And all I have to do is pay the deductible. So I'm hoping I'm hoping we get enough of a event that they'll come up and look at it and go, yeah, you need your roof replaced. Adjuster says it, and we're good to go. But
all of our listeners and Sean and I rally and buy that for you for Christmas.
Oh, would you? That'd be great. Okay.
Kickstarter, yeah.
Glenn needs new gutters.
I'll throw in the $500 deductible I would have had to pay. How's that sound? You guys pay for the rest.
Really, though, that much?
$1,000 to replace a roof, yeah.
Well, I know to replace. I'm talking just. No, I'm not talking replacing your roof. I'm just talking getting you the gutter covers.
Oh, the gutter covers? Oh, yeah. No, those are.
They're pricey.
I think that's about $1,200.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I learned from not owning the house.
Let me put it this way. The gutter covers are not that much. They're probably around $600 to $800. But the problem is when they come out, they won't put them on if you have aged gutters or gutters that are gutters are aged.
Aren't there gutter covers you can buy and put on yourself?
Yes. And I had a friend of mine that did that, and he said, I will never, ever recommend it because it took him 4 weeks to do it.
What?
Because of the way you have to assemble them to put them on, it probably shouldn't have taken him. It took him 4 weekends, I guess I should say. It wasn't like full, but he only had weekends to do it.
Well, yeah.
So
it's a 4 week project. When you own a house and you only have weekends to
do it. Yeah, exactly.
That's 4 weeks.
He said, number one, you think you have all the tools you need.
You don't.
And
I'm sure you have to cut some of them.
Then he got all of it all on and together, and three of them blew off. Three of the little panels that he put on blew off because he didn't have them. So he said, never, ever do that. Have somebody do it. So I vowed to now hire somebody to do that. So,
you know what this whole story tells me?
Don't own a house.
Soon I'm going to have to go over to my mom's and clean out her gutters.
Yeah. Don't own a house. She had two story or one story?
One story. It's not bad. I can get on her roof.
One story is good.
I can get on her roof without even using a ladder.
Yeah. Ooh, my.
Well, she has
a smart as her house.
She has a front porch.
Oh, okay.
So I climb up on the railing of the front porch. And
I see, and then just hop up.
Of course, I'm a spider monkey like that.
That's true. You're a lot more spry than I am. Smaller and spryer than I am. I go up the ladder, and then it takes me like, I don't know, 3.5 minutes to get around onto the roof.
I have this image of Glenn up on the on the ladder in his two-story house with the rope, you know, tied to the thing and looking out over the expanse.
Rope?
Yeah, you tie the rope to the ladder so that it doesn't pull back away. You've never done
no,
that?
No, I don't do that. I mean, there's a rope on my ladder, but that's so that you can pull the ladder down.
I'm looking over the expanse of shingles going, safety first, that's my motto. Hop!
How'd you know?
Because I've seen Ernest Goes to Camp.
I didn't know you tied a rope to the house.
That's what that rope is for.
That's brilliant.
When the ladder goes up, you tie that rope to the house so that if a guy
you get blown
this way. The ladder doesn't go completely down.
There's nothing I would tie a rope to my house that wouldn't go right off of it. Yeah, that's not what that rope's for. But that rope's so you can pull that ladder up higher.
Well, it's a dual purpose though because it's a safety.
I don't know if I'd untie that rope.
It doesn't say.
It doesn't say anywhere on the safety
rules on the side of the ladder to use that rope as a safety. Well, I'll tell you what I've done.
You can use another rope.
You know what I've done?
You can use bungee cord. That'd be fun.
I used to go up on my parents' house and put the Christmas lights and trim the roof, and they had such an angled roof. I mean, a huge angled roof that it was. The laziest guy will find the easiest and quickest way to do something. But I found it was easier to stay on top of the roof and lean over and put the lights on that way instead of going up and down the ladder the whole way around. However, because the roof was so angled, I would take and tie a rope around my waist, throw it over the top of the roof and down to the other side and tie it on the railing of their deck so that if for some reason I did fall, I wasn't going to go falling off the front of the roof.
There you go.
I had a rope that was going to hold on.
You had a rope. Now, that brings up the next question is, since we are getting close to that time of year, did you go ahead and take advantage of the fact of being up on the roof and put your Christmas lights up?
I don't put the lights all the way up there. I just put them across the eave of the
I guess that's true. Roof. You've got the lower porch there.
We've talked about doing the upper ones, but once you get them up, I suppose it's okay the first time, but I don't have hooks up there. I already have hooks on one. I'd have to put, or I could go to the shingle hooks and slide them in, but I've never liked those because it kind of jacks up your shingles, and it's just too much of a hassle to get up there and do those. So
I like those.
I just do the
hassle. My dad always just used a staple gun.
I like those plastic gutter clips.
He never electrocuted himself, as far as I'm aware.
I don't think you can do if you do the plastic gutter clips. I don't think you can have the gutter shields.
I could put actually you can, because the gutter shield only goes from the back of the gutter up to the front. There's still enough of a lid because there has to be a gap where the water runs over.
Isn't there a gutter shield where it's just netting?
That's what I thought. You can get netting.
The problem with netting is that, like, when the leaves come down, they'll set on top of there. Now, they may blow away, but if they sit there and then they get crushed or they move, then the dust and stuff settles down through the netting. So then you get residue and buildup in there. You don't want that. You want the helmet or the shield that comes off and then just has enough of a lip so the water runs underneath and then down into the gutter. And then there's only about this much, you know, room, and the leaves can't get in there. So.
And this is probably more you've ever wanted to know about leaves and gutters.
Do any of our listeners actually own their own home? I don't know.
Wow, I think that might be as bad of a tangent as light bulbs.
Could be. We have gutters this week. So I cleaned my gutters out. What did you guys do this week?
Sean, you want to go ahead?
I thought about cleaning my gutters out and then went, I don't have any. In an apartment.
I feel upset with our office, though, because they put up Christmas lights, and they're on already.
I saw that's cool. You know me, though. I like Christmas. I'm up Christmas.
They're on already. I don't have a problem with them being up. Just don't turn them on until after
Thanksgiving. Here's the thing.
Yes. We got to celebrate killing some Native Americans
Listen. But we say happy holidays. You know why? Because the holidays encompass Thanksgiving, Christmas, Kwanzaa. Hanukkah,
I don't consider Thanksgiving in that.
Hanukkah and New Year's. That's the holidays.
So why is Christmas stuff in stores before Halloween?
That's marketing. The holiday season starts November 1st, as far as I'm concerned. Now,
I consider the holiday season the solstice holiday.
Listen to me. I will agree that before Halloween is way too early. And in fact, Fairlawn Plaza. Did I talk about this last week?
No, but you posted the picture.
Fairlawn Plaza. I went to my niece's birthday party the weekend before Halloween, and Fairlawn Plaza Mall here had their Christmas, their little light post things up. Do they have the little festive light thing?
Mm-hmm.
What? Come on. ridiculous.
It's not cool at all.
Now, the Dillons at Brookwood already has Santa up on the roof.
But again, it's still not okay.
It used to be up.
It's been like two, 3 weeks since they put it up.
The thing is, you guys...
I think it was up before Halloween.
No, it hasn't. Because the kids and I went the weekend before Halloween, and it wasn't up.
Well, so then it went up November 1st.
Oh, I'm sure it did. Don't get me wrong.
Too early.
Don't get me wrong.
Still too early.
Santa doesn't go up November 1st.
Yes, he does. It's the Christmas season. I like Christmas so much.
I know
guys.
You do.
I would rather. I would.
You've been singing Christmas. You've been humming Christmas songs at work.
Christmas songs.
I almost smacked you.
Here's the thing. The thing is, I wish we would just abolish Thanksgiving. I like the idea and what the symbolism is for, but I can't stand the holiday because it's a nothing no good holiday.
That's because you work it every year.
Well, it's not even that. It's just, what are we celebrating? We're celebrating the pilgrims' good fortune through surviving...
Dysentery.
Yeah, dysentery. I mean, really.
We should call it the Oregon Trail holiday.
Now, everybody, I know that the listeners out there are going to cry foul and say, but it's a day you're supposed to be giving thanks and be thankful for what you have. Screw that. You should be thankful for what you have every day of the year. You don't need one federally designated day for that. And what is it?
I agree with
what
you
is
on
it
that
now?
Point.
Now it's becoming the second Black Friday, because or the post-Black Friday, because everybody's opening now on Thanksgiving Day. It's going to become the big shopping day as well.
Did you hear there's a Gray Wednesday?
What?
Yes. What is Gray Wednesday?
Kid you not.
Is that when aliens touch down?
It's part of the shopping schedule now, is that they've got Black Friday.
Who's doing Gray Wednesday?
Mel was telling me about it. I want to say Target had an ad.
Oh, my gosh.
She was going through the ads in the paper from this Sunday, and she went, what? I mean, just...
So I'm starting to move into abolish Thanksgiving because it's absolutely ridiculous. And here's the thing. Sean, you've known me for years and years and years. I just don't like the food from Thanksgiving. What do I eat? I eat the turkey. I eat the mashed potatoes. That's it. This is a man
who wants to get rid of Thanksgiving because it slows him down before Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. It slows me down before Christmas.
He starts building up that head of steam probably, I'm going to say, mid-Halloween day. He's like,
You tolerate Halloween up until about two or three in the afternoon,
and then the spiders start coming down.
It's when I shut the porch light off after the last trick-or-treater, and then I start
maybe the last trick-or-treater.
Actually, I've always threatened to dress up as Santa Claus and hand out candy. Hey, it's still a costume, right?
You probably get some looks. Ho, ho, ho! I have a candy bar.
If you dress up like that, you better give out really good candy.
Little gift wrap candy.
Here's some orange nasties.
Have some circus peanuts.
Oh God! I didn't think of that. Okay. They asked in the paper at Washburn, "There's like, what's the worst Halloween candy you've ever gotten?" I said orange nasties. I didn't think of circus peanuts, but I did get those one year from somebody. We went back and forked their yard.
Orange nasties? Were those the little taffy candy?
The little
that
taffy
like,
and the black and orange wrappers.
Gosh, those were horrible. What were they supposed to be? They were like nut flavored. I think they were supposed to be peanut butter flavored, but they just taste like nasties.
Oh, I remember those.
They tasted like wax paper.
Yeah, they were horrible.
And of course, you couldn't. Maybe that was because they tasted like wax paper because you couldn't ever get the paper off of them.
Why did you even bother? I just chucked those out. I tried the first two or three times,
and then it was like, okay, I'm done with these.
So the other nasty ones were those long wafer-looking things that had like they were like white or kind of a beige, and they had brown stripes on them. Do you remember those? They were wrapped up. They were they're rectangular, and then they were a beige or a cream color. Mostly, but then they had like these brown stripes on them.
I remember those. They were horrid.
I don't know what they were supposed to be either.
I don't remember those either.
Oh, man.
Oh, now it's candy cigarettes.
Those were awesome.
Those were the bomb diggity.
Those were the bomb diggity. They had, like, at Halloween time, they'd have the small ones. They had little four sticks in them. Those are incredible.
I like a candy that allows me to color as well as eat it.
Wait, they used. Really? Did they do
it was
that?
Like chalk.
They were pretty much chalk.
Okay, you could just go right on the sidewalk with them.
Now, I never did that. They've come back. I don't know if you knew this or not.
They're called candy sticks now.
Yeah. They are the nastiest.
Are they?
They brought them into the bank.
I'm sure they're
last
still
year,
as nasty
like,
as they were when you were younger.
And I went and ate one. It was like, and it was this massive, slightly digested chalk. I mean,
20 minutes in, what did you guys
gross.
Do?
Well, we went out because it was, Keith had the brilliant idea Saturday.
It's going to be the last day for a while.
Last nice day for a good long while here, weather-wise. We should go play disc golf.
You bastards!
It wasn't worth it.
Why didn't you... This is the second time you guys have gone to play disc golf.
First
this
time,
is the second time Sean's gone to play disc golf.
You know the last time
me.
You know the last time I played disc golf.
Heck with you guys! You're the one that got me into this.
Day. I thought about calling you.
To heck with you!
I did.
I thought about calling you.
I thought about calling you, and then I thought to myself, you. Glenn's either A, busy with the family, or B, cleaning his gutters. He's not going to come play disc golf. Especially when we woke up that morning.
Especially in the day we had. We didn't even do a full nine.
Mel looked at her phone and went, huh, wind advisory.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I looked at the wind and said,
You wouldn't have came anyways.
So then I get a text from Sarah. She's like, we're not coming out. It's, you know, late. And we got a later start on it than when we wanted anyway. So then... we decided, well, we're going out anyway because it's a nice day. We just want to get out.
Because Sarah and I went to lunch with my dad at a Thai restaurant.
Oh, that's right. I was teasing you because I was like, you guys aren't going to be done till like 4 afternoon anyway.
Well, it was like 2-something. And then...
to which you replied, I'm not coming.
Yeah. Well, that was mostly because I got home from Friday Night Who, plugged my phone in, and my charger didn't charge it. And my phone died. And I couldn't get my phone to charge because of my charger.
No, what was the one with the charger?
It's crappy.
Seriously, still not working here?
No, I got a new one.
Oh, okay.
And that's what we were doing instead of going to play disc golf when after dinner or after lunch. But
the technical term.
When I was still living with Sean's, I accidentally stepped on the charger and broke the USB part in the part that plugs into the wall. So I bought a new one. Unfortunately, I bought it from Overstock.com because it was it's a charger. I mean,
how'd that work out for you?
Yeah, the $30 charger was well worth it.
Okay, I'm gonna throw since you've brought this up. Here's a PSA for our listeners. Okay, I used to work for Sprint. I know nobody does this, but buy your accessories where you buy the phone. If you go out,
see, I went to Best Buy.
If you go out to the Best Buy, buy your accessories at Best Buy. If you go out to Sprint or AT&T or wherever, buy your accessories at Sprint or AT&T. And here's the reason: yes, you will pay $30 or $40 for a charger, but
it'll work.
It won't break unless you do something bad to it. And if you do something bad to it, 9 times out of 10, you can take it back in and kind of admit that you screwed it up, and they'll replace it for you. And this is a big one that not everybody knows about. If something should happen, like let's say you buy a car charger and then you go and you plug your phone in and you start the car and it causes this weird power surge that happens to feed back into your outlet and fries your phone, as long as it's an actual accessory that's a name brand from the place, they'll replace the phone for you too.
Mm.
But if you bought the cheap knockoff one at Walmart, not so much. So,
well, and that. Besides the point, I had to... Every night before I went to bed and plugged it in, I had to turn my phone off and turn it back on just to get it to charge.
Okay, that's just weird. You need to take that into the shop.
No, that was the charger.
The old charger.
Oh, that was the charger.
Now he's got $30 charger.
Yeah, I plugged in last night. No problem.
Okay, so...
So, I don't recommend Overstock.com.
So we sent him a text.
I don't recommend Sprint, so...
Well, we're AT&T, so...
You are AT&T.
I threw that disclaimer out there. Whoever you purchased it from. I don't think it's Overstock. I think it's the charger you bought from Overstock.
Oh, that could be. It was like $2.
There you go.
But it came with a car charger, too, which only works if the phone's off. It will only charge the phone if it's off.
Because if the battery's on, it's drawing way too much juice to put it aside. Anyway, so we sent a text that we're going out anyway if you guys want to join us. And they're like, man, all right. Which I know was Keith going, ooh, really? And Sarah went, do you really want to go? He's like, yeah. And she was like, okay.
She didn't mind it. She enjoyed getting out and walking around.
So we get out to the lake.
Which, mistake number two.
I mean,
the lake is busy, is windier on an average
like that.
Day.
It's just...
Seriously, there were several throws where I went... And it goes, and almost passes over my head.
We threw backwards a lot. Not intentionally. Just that's where they went.
Look at the distance. No, never mind. It's coming back.
Hole in one. We were playing towards seven and gotten six, but okay.
Yeah, it was that bad.
So we played till about, and we kept talking. We
didn't even do nine holes. We got to seven.
We did like three and started talking about calling it. But we were like, yeah, we're kind of having fun just being outdoors. Okay, we'll go for a little bit longer. And then we got to five. And it's like, well, let's do one more because that one kind of angles back toward the parking lot, and then it'll be, you know. And then the next one is like, well,
the wind's died down a little bit.
The sun's setting. Let's go ahead and play until it gets dark. And
so that the listeners know, we had winds here yesterday of constantly about 40 miles an hour. We had gusts up to 60 and 70 miles an hour.
Yeah. And they were never in our favor.
Not a one. I teed off on, what was it, five? I teed off on five, which completely faces, like, toward the road. And this thing went... And I thought it was going in the water.
The lake is behind me.
And I thought, oh man.
Tree, it would have.
And yeah, there was. There was a big tree saved it from going in the lake.
Wow.
That was about the time that I started grousing a little bit more about, maybe we should call it. I almost lost that disc again. So, but now we, like I said, we had fun. And then today we went out and saw
Wreck-It Ralph. I'm going to wreck it.
It was mediocre.
I can fix it.
So good.
It was. It was amazingly good.
I think it's one of my favorite animated movies of all time.
Hey!
That's how much I enjoyed this movie.
I told you.
I was surprised.
And I champion TMNT.
I'm a fan of that one. I was surprised they spent as much time in Sugar Rush.
Yes.
I really thought they were going to do more game jumping, at least initially.
Spoilers. Let's give spoiler warning for Wreck-It Ralph now.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't have wanted to know that going in.
He's just saying.
I was pleasantly surprised.
They spent more time there than I thought they would, based on the premise.
And a lot of reviews I've seen said that. So,
But I found that I began to really. I felt like I was going into insulin withdrawal from watching Sugar Rush. My God, there was a lot of sugar in that.
But so many of the jokes in Sugar Rush were priceless.
That was the
best joke, bar none.
Ever. Yep. Well, and then the following one. With the dogs?
With the dogs.
You guys can't talk about jokes that you can't spoil and sit here and have the listeners.
I threw out a spoiler.
It was good.
Yeah. And they know what we're talking about.
Hey, you know this one?
You remember that one time when that thing happened to that guy?
That was awesome. I want to go back and see it just to see all of the video game references that I missed the first time.
And there were tons.
I was surprised by the Sonic one.
Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah.
Sonic the Screwdriver.
Yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. That's
How they did that one. I thought that was interesting.
Clever way to do it, too.
And all the clever references to Mario.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Caitlin says, wow, that was kind of weird way that they used Sonic. Except for, you know, it was really kind of appropriate. I said, yeah, I think you're right. It was almost in his character to be that kind of, you know, that kind of character. So
I saw an interview.
If you die outside your game.
Or read an interview with one of the writers, and they wanted so hard to try to get Mario into it.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
And there just wasn't a good enough role for him.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to have a Sonic cameo.
They didn't want
to have
a role. That was the thing. I think you probably read the same article I did. They were talking about how they've been working for you. This concept actually came around in the 1990s. And they've been trying to do this movie since the 90s, since like 97. And it wasn't big for the lack of it just falling through and nobody wanting to do it. It was a matter of how do we do it and how do we make it work. And it wasn't until they kind of dug the script back up. Well, they dug the idea back up and then wrote the script around it. But they said they went to everyone that they had that did cameos. They said, listen, here's what we want to do. We don't want to Disney-fy your character. We want it to be an homage to the characters that we're having, and we want to stay true to their spirit. And they said that we were really this was the most input that, and they said they would show the dailies as they would come back. They said this is the most input they've had outside of Disney for any film whatsoever. Even Roger Rabbit, when Warner Brothers was on board with that, and they had some other King's Features, and I think some of the other groups. But they said that what they would do is to make sure that the game companies were comfortable doing this and letting Disney do this, they would take it to him and say, here's what we've got so far. This is what we're going to do. And they would exercise notes from the game companies and say, you know, and if they thought this was a little not in the spirit of the character, they'd say, okay, we'll change it. We're going to do what you want to do. And they said that's what made it work, and that's why so many of these game companies were on board with saying, okay, we're going to let you feature our product here, because they treated them with kid gloves, and they said we're going to do this and give it the heart,
because they respected
them. They guess we're going to give these characters respect that they're due. So yeah. I thought that was really cool, and it came across in the film.
It totally came across. Even the little itty bitty things like the that's in the trailer, the scene where they're all at the meeting having the Bad Guys Anonymous or whatever it is, and the ghost, he's not sitting, he's kind of
hovering. Yes,
well, he's not even hovering. He's still kind of bobbing up and down, floating.
Sure,
like he's in his little box on Pac-Man. Because that's what they do. They just kind of meander around a little bit. It was just there's so many little touches like that. That's just, or the Fix-It Felix game characters that.
Yeah.
Strange jerky 8-bit motions. Even the pub.
Yeah,
had that the jerky 8-bit.
Tappers.
You mean Tappers?
Tappers. Yeah. I blanked on the title.
Which I'll tell you what, the one little, and they did this because it's a Disney film, but the one little mistake there, if you'll notice, is back in the 1980s. Keith, you might not remember this. Back in the 1980s, when Tapper came out, there was Tapper, and there was Root Beer Tapper. And Tapper was the atypical bartender who served Budweiser beer, because it was actually sponsored by Budweiser. And then there was Root Beer Tapper, which he was dressed more like a soda jerk. So he had the red and white stripes, and he had the little paper hat that soda jerks wore. So that was the difference, because the Root Beer Tappers always went into establishments where kids were going to be. Tapper went into bars and Pizza Huts and things like that where they actually sold beer. And so what they did in this film is you had the Tapper character from Tapper, but you had him serving root beer. And they say that clearly, root beer serving root beer.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing that I went, okay, I'm just going to have to let it go. It's not accurate. But I absolutely love the idea of the fact that it was Tapper. And he looked like and he does the, he's sitting there like the bartender, he's cleaning the glass, he's listening to Ralph's problems, and he says, oh, wait just a minute. And he runs down the line and sends them just like the Tapper came. It was so great.
Mel and I were laughing so far. And of course, you know, Billy and Jesse went with us, and they're like going,
yeah.
I
there was stuff.
I wondered if there was a lot of stuff
the kids
that
didn't.
Yeah.
I had to lean over and go, we actually used to play that game, you know.
Oh, okay.
The beauty of it is my kids had moments where they were laughing too. So
it's not a reference humor. If you are of our age group and you remember this stuff, there's so much more to mine out of that. But if you're not, I mean, the kids came away and they're like, we really enjoyed that. So, you know.
It has a lot of heart too. You mentioned the fact that it was so heavy in Sugar Rush. I think part of that is originally, this is part of the article I saw, it was supposed to be a third world they were going to jump into, like The Sims.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would have worked this well.
I don't know that it would.
I don't know. I came to fall in love with everybody in Sugar Rush, with the exception of the...
The greatest...
Oh!
Yeah, so...
The king?
The greatest scene in the movie was the Konami code.
Yes.
Oh, that was awesome.
The greatest scene in the movie was Konami code. And the best thing is, we went on a Saturday afternoon, and there was maybe 50 people in the audience, most of them kids, and there were three of us that just hooting and hollered, laughed at the Konami code, and it was all guys my age. And we were just and we had the rest of the theaters going, what did we just miss? These guys are cracking up. It's something I don't understand. Right,
AB start.
And I was saying along with him when he started doing it, I went, oh, no, really? Yes. It's A, B. Or up, down, up, down. Left, right, left, right. No, up, up, down, down, left, left, right. Or left, right, A, B, start.
Sarah's not much of a gamer and wasn't very sure about going to see the movie. She wanted to go see Skyfall this gamer, weekend, though, but she loved the movie.
Don't have to be a gamer.
And Sarah Silverman, not annoying.
No, not at all. So, then I said,
and it's like John C. Reilly, not the annoying comedy version.
No.
And Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch.
She's Jane Lynch, but I got to be honest, I found her character mildly arousing. She was hot.
I can't remember the actor that plays Felix.
Jack McGuire.
Yeah, Jack McGuire.
That's totally his
character. It's so his
character
from 30 Rock.
And you know who he reminds me of? Our morning meteorologist.
Tom Hagen, really?
He's totally Tom Hagen.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Totally.
Huh. I'll be darned.
You'll look at Tom Hagen in a new light now. When you see him on air, not in, so much in
real life. Maybe so, yeah. Because he's got, he does have two personalities. Okay, we can talk about that. All right, do you guys do anything else this weekend? We move on to news.
That's about it.
Yeah, 35 minutes in.
Let's move to news.
First up.
Hey, you want to talk about gutters some more? Glenn, get your mind out of the gutter.
First up, it's confirmed. Neil Gaiman's story is a Cyberman. Spoilers.
Too late.
I didn't finish
it's a Cyberman. Wait, oh, they won't get it from
it's
Matt.
A Cyberman. Spoilers.
Cyber
Matt.
Matt.
Woman.
That was even more of a spoiler.
It's a Cyber Matt Smith. Yeah. Renegade robot cop.
It's like the Android Invasion.
Yes, Neil Gaiman is doing a Cyberman story, which...
Which
I can't get excited about. I can't get excited about that.
Oh, I think it's going to be fantastic.
I absolutely love the fact that it's Gaiman, and if anybody can do a good Cyberman story, it's Gaiman. But I'm in the same boat that I think Keith is with the Daleks, and you to a point, with the Daleks, that they've been overused in the new series, that I'm really tired of seeing them. Now, I will say, if Gaiman can do a Cyberman story in the same vein that Moffat did Asylum and make the Daleks scary again and make them relevant again, then I'm okay. I'll be okay with it. I'm reserving judgment because...
And from Gaiman's interview, that's the way he's approached it, at least. And
as
much as I love the Cybermen, I would agree with you. I would love to see a different adversary. Yeah.
They always tell you what they're going to do with it, but you don't know.
I disagree. I think what we specifically with the Cybermen, what we've gotten is the Cybermen are back.
Are you chatting with somebody online or something?
People keep tweeting me. Apparently, liked my.
Don't you have a silent?
He's doing a show, folks. Yes, I do.
Oh, you did.
That's what they responded to. Yeah.
I gotcha. That wasn't your Doctor Who photo challenge. We didn't talk about that.
We will.
We'll do that.
We will. It's part of our news. Or we could do it as
it's part of our feedback.
What we've gotten before has been, you know, Cybermen are back this season. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, whatever. Gaiman has gone kind of out of his way saying Tomb of the Cybermen or the moon base or, you know, they're not stomping, marching.
Yes.
Brass band Cybermen that
they
we've
turn
got.
Around and you'll
the, all of a sudden they're there. They snuck up on you, Cybermen. And
I don't remember stealthy secret Cybermen and Tomb of the Cybermen or, well, I didn't see Moonbase.
They were very stealthy until you put a piece of plastic sheeting in front of them for them to.
I just
regardless, any now, of the classic Cybermen are more stealthy than the new series.
No. Yeah. No, that's not true.
Oh, they
no,
are.
That's not true. No. Didn't you see him shock?
But they didn't.
No, they are not. They are not the stomp 'em.
Yes,
Cybermen. I give you that.
The one that you can hear from three streets.
I just don't think that the Cybermen have ever been very stealthy. But
they didn't sound like a trash can falling down a flight of stairs.
No, I would agree with you.
And that's one of the things I like the least about new series Cybermen is how the stomping noises. And even hearing them just move.
We've seen pictures this week of the new design. What do you guys think of the design?
I like the head. I don't like the body.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't like the body. It looks too much like...
I think I'm okay with the head, and I don't like the body. So I think we're all kind of on the same page there.
Gaiman's...
Go ahead.
I was like, Gaiman had an exact quote where he commented that the Daleks were the ones running around the galaxy shouting exterminate and blowing things up, whereas the Cybermen kind of had a different MO. And so to see them... Delete, 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 and clumping through the streets. That's what he's wanting to move away from. So I'm optimistic. I'm kind of with you. I'm still a little reserved because I'm tired of Cybermen. I'm tired of Daleks too. But the Dalek episode was so good that
that's the exception.
It comes from the fact that I don't feel like we've seen a revival of enough classic monsters.
Well, that's true.
I would agree with that.
So
like, let's bring the
it's like we keep going back to the Daleks. We keep going back to the Cybermen.
Yeah. At least they're
are iconic villains, don't get me wrong.
At least they physically redesigned the Cybermen for the story. There is at least that. But there's also another great bit of news coming from this story.
Would that be the guest star?
Keith? That would be the guest star.
Who's guest starring in it, Keith?
Warwick Davis.
Keith's so excited
about I am Warwick. So excited about Warwick it's Davis.
Warwick.
No, it's not. Warwick.
Oh, they've spelled it wrong.
Well, according to
IMDb, because I think I'm pretty sure it's Warwick.
Well, we trust IMDb.
Even if it is Warwick.
It's pronounced Warwick.
It's Warwick, because Warwick. I have seen him in person at Celebration 2. Would have been, no, was he, was it 3?
He was at 3.
We didn't see him at 3.
I've got a picture of him at 3. I mean, he was walking away from
me. Oh, yeah. Well, I actually sat in on one of his
he's
panels
on Twitter.
At Celebration 2.
Oh, I didn't think he went to 2.
Yeah, I went to 2 by myself.
Oh.
Yep. Actually, I went by myself and met a guy that I used to trade toys online with.
I do remember that. Yeah, now that you say that. I remember that.
It's spelled Warwick.
It's Warwick.
It's pronounced Warwick.
It's Warwick. Yeah.
Okay, so the important part of this is you know what
Warwick
this means.
Davis.
Warwick Davis is going to be in this episode. You know what this means. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire just got that much more integrated into the universe.
Oh, connected, yeah.
Because Professor Flitwick.
Yeah, whatever.
I like to think this is the start of the influx of Star Wars.
Star Wars got...
I like to think of it as the beginning of the crossover with Leprechaun.
Oh, what about Legend?
Was he in Legend?
He wasn't Legend, he was in Willow.
Willow, yes. Willow. Sorry, yes.
He was Willow.
No,
he
sorry.
Was
Willow.
Yes, he was.
He was Willow.
He was Willow.
Disney owns Willow now, so that's we can't do that.
Well, now... That makes Star Wars and Willow fit together a bit more.
Yeah, they do. But Leprechaun's up for
Star Wars and Willow already fit because they were both under Lucasfilm. How did that make it any more? Now that Disney owns both of them, how does that make it any more connected?
Because under the House of Mouse,
everything's more incestuous.
Yes.
Oh!
Did you go to Umdaba?
No, but.
What are you talking about?
That is his. Oh! It's usually when he's on Indaba.
That's usually when he goes.
No,
to
no, so-and-so was in such-and-such. Another guest star was on Dirk Gently.
Which one?
Jason Watkins. I don't know who that is. Let me Indaba him.
Wait for it.
It wasn't Stephen Meggett.
Wait for it.
No, I'm betting it's the other
Wait
guy.
Wait for it.
Do we have some Imdaba music, please?
Imdaba.
Watson? Watkins. Oh, nope, that's not him. It's the inspector.
Oh, when you get an orgasm, ooh.
I was really hoping it was McDuff.
Oh, well, no, we know it wasn't McDuff.
I couldn't remember McDuff's name.
McDuff. The inspector.
The bald guy.
That's not.
He's gonna guest star though.
But the inspector from Sherlock has
Lestrade,
which is cool. But
which we saw. Yeah, we actually talked about that. Monday, which we tried to get a hold of you so you could do this.
We watched V for Vendetta
on Monday, which is mm-hmm. November 5th, Guy Fawkes Day,
the 5th of November,
and Geek Girl Brittany,
joined us.
She joined us, and we tweeted. He was having a freak out because, first of all, he said,
Lestrade!
He goes,
"Wait, Lestrade!"
No, he said, the first one was, "Hey, that's Patrick from Coupley."
Oh, yes. I had no exposure to Coupley at that point, so this guy was no
Wait a minute, that's Lestrade from Sherlock.
Wow. When I watched
it was like him looking up things on Imdaba.
The first several, until this time of seeing V for Vendetta, I had no exposure to these these BBC UK actors, other than the big ones of Stephen Fry and all of those.
Why we could expand your mind.
Yeah.
We sure missed you, though.
I saw your tweet come in and thought about it, and Mel and I had just, I don't even remember specifically what happened Monday. It was just a physically, mentally exhausting day. And we both wound up crashing at about 9:30. Just, you know, as soon as the kids kind of got done with their thing, we were like, "I'm going to bed." And we went to and slept. And I was late to class the next day. I could not rouse myself from that. And then Tuesday, Halo came out. So
over commercialization of Thanksgiving, right here.
I agree.
Right here, cookies, now, Pillsbury cookies.
We've got he's holding up.
Don't criticize. You're going to be eating those next week.
I'd like to comment that these are in the refrigerator and not on the table.
I told you to wait till it was closer to Thanksgiving.
Ready to bake Thanksgiving shape sugar cookies. Please do not eat raw cookie dough.
You want to know what I'm going to say to that?
I can't say it here. Hell yeah, I'm going to eat it. I agree with you. Thanksgiving is over-commercialized. On the way over, one of the houses over here on 33rd has this gigantic inflatable turkey.
Yeah, I saw that.
But because it's, you know, the back end of it is red feathers, I almost stopped the car because I thought it was some weird satanic snowman.
Oh, no.
It was like...
You should have seen it yesterday when the wind was blowing.
What is this?
Look closely. The turkey is doing this. Seriously, this is what it looks like.
So it's so great for the audio.
One side. It's hanging its head, drooping to one side, like it needs some sort of like antidepressant drugs or something. It's
on Saturday, it didn't look like it didn't have a head because the wind was blowing so far.
You know what we need to do? We need to run and go to like a Chiefs game and get the giant inflatable axe and come back and set it next to the turkey.
You do that the day before Thanksgiving.
Oh. Okay, to round
out, you guys do this week.
To round out, to round out this news,
I threatened a balloon animal.
An actress named Tasmin Outhwaite.
Tasmin, I love her work.
She's guest starred on Paradox, The Fixer, Hotel Babylon, which I've heard of. EastEnders, which I've heard of. She was on EastEnders. Is going to guest star in this story, too. That's all three guest stars.
Not as exciting as Warwick.
No, it's not.
Move along.
Move along.
Our last bit of news is...
Chicago TARDIS.
Chicago TARDIS added three new guests.
I was ready to move along. See, you pushed me.
The first guest...
moving along to the next item on news.
...is Paul Mark Davis.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Who played the trickster on Sarah Jane Adventures.
Which I'd be more excited over that if...
I could have sworn that was a woman.
It was kind of a recognizable...
It's a guy in a mask. It's like meeting, I don't know, Boba Fett. Oh, wait.
Oh. I feel bad. Jeremy Bullock's here. What are you going to have him sign? The one with the bucket on your head? Really? Yeah.
Because... That's what he's most known
That's
for.
That's who you are, man.
If I'd have seen the Hal the Archer ones, though, I'd...
Oh, Mel got Hal the Archer.
I know she did.
It was cool looking.
I was so mad that I didn't see that.
You're the one that discovered he was Hal the Archer.
I know. But I didn't see that he actually had photos there of Hal the Archer to sign. Arg.
Also,
who's going to be a
new guest besides Mark Paul Davis?
Warwick Davis.
No.
Oh.
And Jill Mohindra.
Oh, yeah.
Who plays Ronnie in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Not to be confused with Ronnie from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Right.
Ronnie Chandra.
This is Ronnie, not the Ronnie.
This is Ronnie, replacement Ronnie.
This is R-A-N-I, not R-O-N.
Wait, no,
minute.
It's
R-A-N-I. It is
R-A-N-I. It threw me when they first threw it out there.
Same way, aren't they?
I wanted to leap off the couch and go, I said she'd be back! Not when I had mine! Different show.
Oh, what if they end up doing revealing that?
That's a stretch, Keith.
But how awesome would that be?
Well,
I haven't seen the end of Sarah Jane.
Not based on what I've seen so far. maybe she's got a fob watch and her real persona is like, she actually thinks she's human, and that's the big reveal at the end of the series. No.
Who else is at Chicago TARDIS?
And
because it's really people I don't care about.
Burton Gorman, who played Owen Harper.
Oh.
You
didn't call him Owen. If he'd said Owen, I'd have known.
Owen Harper from Torchwood, who was also in Dark Knight Rises.
He was in Dark Knight Rises. What's his real name?
Burn Gorman.
Burn.
B-U-R-N.
B-U-R-N.
I can't think of any other way to pronounce that.
I'm pretty sure it's burn, but I...
Burn.
There's no apostrophe.
Oh.
If there was an apostrophe, I'd say burn.
Is there a slash?
Burn?
No.
Because if there's a... I found this out in anthropology. If there's a slash, it's... So you could be burn.
That's Ethiopian.
No, they do it in the Dabi Jukwatsi.
Oh. Okay.
Because I've heard of them.
I learned something in that class, let me tell you. I think the teacher does that. She talks a lot about the Dabi Juwatsi, and I think she says that just because she knows how to pronounce Dabi Juwat, or how, you know, just because she can say it. That's why we talk so much about them.
Dabi Juwatsi.
There you go.
I got it.
You got it.
The Dabi Juwatsi. All
right. Well, regardless.
Something new every day.
They're a tribal band in the Philippines, I think. Not to be confused with the Trobian Islanders.
Is that it, Chicago?
That's it for news.
And if we have any listeners in that area of the world, hi.
All right.
I hope we haven't offended you by the pronunciation of your
country. No, it is. It's W. Your tribe. Watsi.
You earlier said whatever, so like you weren't quite sure about the last part.
That's because he messed it up.
I did. The W. Let's see, you know.
Feedback.
Oh, one more thing that I did this weekend.
Every time I try to move to feedback, and he has something to add. It's another piece of news that we didn't talk about in the pre-show meeting, I forgot to mention something when we were talking about what we did this weekend.
About this, I didn't think about that. So we finished our Bond films.
Did you go see the?
We didn't see
Jobby Ju. Let's see.
No.
Sorry.
Is that a part of the new Bond film?
No, they're in the new Star Wars film.
Yes, you should.
The Geonosians.
Which we have a new writer.
There's a new writer, yeah. We didn't go that tangent this week.
We didn't go that. We finished the Bond films. We have watched all of them but Skyfall.
I saw your tweet.
And we watched Never Say Never Again last night.
Sarah and I joined for Quantum of Solace, which was my first viewing of Quantum.
You hadn't seen it yet?
Worst Bond film ever.
Yeah, it's not worst ever, but
it's worst
bad.
Bond. It's worst.
I don't know if
I like Never Say Never Again more than I like.
It caused me to take License to Kill and Goldmine from
Sean. I would have liked Never Say Never Again if I hadn't seen it twice already.
No, that's true. Yeah. But do you know who's in Never Say Never Again?
Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson is in Never Say Never Again. He showed up and we were both like, oh!
I knew that.
I didn't know that.
Oh.
I was gobsmacked.
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row.
He's also Johnny English.
Yeah, but he was also Doctor Who. I mean, let's talk about the cool thing. Doctor Who was in a Bond film.
I didn't know you didn't know he was in that.
I didn't know he was in
that. But you had seen it before.
I'd seen it before, but I don't know. Maybe because I didn't know Rowan Atkinson. Yeah. And maybe it helped that the kids were watching Bean when I came home from school. So I made that instant connection. But
you see they added a new Bean film to Netflix?
Oh, it's the original one, isn't it?
Is it?
Being the movie, isn't it?
Being the movie.
I think so. Yeah. I absolutely love Being the TV series. Absolutely love it. Hilarious. I watch it over and over again. And I love Mr. Bean Takes a Holiday. Absolutely love that movie. It was so nice, endearing, so true to the series. And then there's Bean.
The movie.
The only good part about that is Rowan Atkins.
Which they did recycle a lot of the jokes from the TV show, but he's rolling that painting down the hallway on the cart.
I laugh at it when I watch it because it is Rowan Atkinson. But
anyway, but yeah, I didn't know Rowan Atkinson was
Bean. It was
very much Americanized. I didn't. Well, he comes to America, so you know.
Anyway, never seen.
I didn't know that he was in that, so that was a big thing for both of us.
Did you know he's in Lion King too?
Yeah, I was aware of that one.
Okay,
wait. Oh yeah. I knew that.
Okay. Wait.
I gave a revelation.
He's not in Lion King 2. He's in Lion King.
I gave a huge revelation.
He's in 1.5, though, isn't he?
No, he didn't revise his voice. I thought he came back. No.
I gave a huge revelation to Sarah.
He didn't even lend his voice to the parks, which most of the actors, when they have a voice in the park, lend their voice. He didn't for the Tiki Room under new management.
Sarah started.
I don't know why.
Sports Night, and didn't realize that was Rafiki.
Did she like it?
She does like Sports Night. She loves Sports Night so far.
All right, moving on to feedback.
Okay, moving on to feedback.
Feedback.
Feedback. Feedback. We've got lots of feedback tonight.
Yeah. First up,
we're making fun of the Dabi Juwatsi.
Zaisha Chang.
What?
Zaisha Chang commented on our episode 6 of our podcast. I know, but this makes me giggle.
All right.
Hey, this is hard for me because I've never done anything like this. But I have a huge crush on you. I've never been able to tell you for reasons which would quickly identify as obvious if you knew who this was.
Sorry. I haven't read this.
I'm really attracted to you and I think it would be great to get with. Read full card here. Oh. Darn. The funniest thing about this is that it was from Live Journal in episode 6. I haven't seen this logo in forever.
Live Journal?
Are we on Live Journal?
We were
apparently.
We weren't even on Live Journal. We were Live, on.
It's from Live Journal. LJ_notify@livejournal.com.
Huh. We weren't on Live Journal. We were on Blogger.
We were on Blogger originally.
Blogspot, I guess.
You're right.
Well, it's Blogger.
It's Blogger now. Same.
They're both. Yeah. No, it's both. They're still Blogspot addresses.
Is there a Blogspot address?
We were a Blogspot address. But it's Blogger. It's the Google.
I thought it was just yet another long line of things that Google changed the name on.
No. Well, they may have, but we had a Blogspot address.
We were a Blogspot before we were a... Well, that's... Darn.
All right. So who's really up first, Keith?
Daryl!
Daryl writes, question, answer. Your name. Oh, I started early. Okay. Comment question. Hello, Vortexians.
Ooh, I like it.
That's kind of a new one. After listening to the podcast this week, I was intrigued by the origin of the Arm & Hammer Company. I had remembered a different origin and looked it up on Wiki. Here's the link. And he gives a link. Arm & Hammer, as in Armand Hammer, was involved, but it goes back to the 1860s when James Church owned Vulcan Spice and Mills, and the symbol represents the Roman god Vulcan, the god of fire and metalworking. Armand's father owned stock in Church, and Dwight named him after the Socialist Labor Party, SLP, logo, for which he was a member of. So maybe it's correct. After all, Wiki is never wrong. By the way,
I didn't go into researching that much, but yeah, that gives even a little more history. But what it boils down to is Army Hammer is still heir to
the Army Hammer is still heir to the throne,
part of that dynasty. That's where the company originated, was even far back. So thanks for the history lesson.
Socialist Labor Party, huh?
That is their symbol.
I always suspected.
It's slightly different than the Arm & Hammer symbol. But, so is that...
I think I'm going to name my kid Hammer & Sickle and see if anybody notices.
When we buy the little orange boxes to defunkify our refrigerators, is it like a subliminal ploy?
The little boxes, really?
The subliminal ploy to... You don't buy the boxes to put in your refrigerator to defunkify your... refrigerator, so it doesn't smell.
What do I use? Baking powder. Or no, baking soda.
That's Arm & Hammer. Arm & Hammer.
I also use it for other things.
Well, yeah. Brush your teeth.
To bake with.
It defunctifies my shoes.
Baking powder to bake with. Anyway, baking.
Don't let us be silly. By the way, I still have the vinyl album, Pac-Man Fever,
yes,
from back when I was a teen.
So do I.
It was awesome. I need to see Wreck-It Ralph now. It's really kind of scary that songs like these on PFM and others like a disco
PMF.
Close and PMF, pardon me.
Pac-Man Fever.
Pac-Man Fever.
And others like a disco Close Encounters of the Third Kind song were popular at the time. I had that one. Not to mention Steve Martin's King Tut.
I love that one.
And Rick D's Disco Duck.
Disco Duck.
All guilty pleasures. Doctor Who. Not much to say except that I certainly hope Series 7B broadcasts early in 2013, February or March, and runs until April, and then shows Series 8 in the fall, running through the anniversary in November. Moffat promised, quote, more episodes than ever in 2013, end quote. So unless they follow the transmission schedule, it will be the fewest number of episodes shown in a year next to the 6 shown in 2012. Come on, Moffat, give us the goods. Keep up the good work. Daryl Christensen from St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you very much, Daryl. And yeah, I think they will. I think we've kind of already. I mean, we know for sure. Obviously, it's coming back at Christmas,
right?
And then I suspect it will be early. I don't know if anything specific's been said.
Do we know? Has the BBC announced that it's going to be aired here on Christmas Day? Because I know when we made the announcement that it would be on Christmas.
I never saw it in America.
That was from the BBC.
I haven't heard yet.
Sorry. All right.
Where's the panic button?
Who's next? Oh, that was a bit of news. You know the fun buttons program, the app that I have on my...
Oh, yeah.
That has all the different buttons and all those different... They released 10 more buttons, and in this setting, TARDIS Grom.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I was excited.
Did you hear about
even
the...
I can get that any number of ways.
Because you can pull this up, because you have an iPhone. If you still have an iPhone, don't you?
I do.
You haven't killed Siri yet, buried her in the backyard for being... silly.
Siri's awesome.
Did you know that there is a Shatner reading poetry?
Oh, I have seen. I have seen that. Yeah,
Chateauetry.
He was tweeting about that all last week and pimping that out.
Oh, he was tweeting about it before last week.
I went to download it. Building up to it. It's only on the iPhone. The Android store does not have Chateau.
It's coming soon.
Oh, what good?
But from what I understand, it costs money.
It does cost money.
I don't know. It might be worth it for Shatner.
All right, our next bit of feedback comes from Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil writes, thanks, Dr. Phil.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was great.
No, that's...
It was blank.
That was a joke. Dr. Phil sent us feedback that had nothing in the body of the email. So.
And no attachments.
Dr. Phil, Keith tried to contact you to find if there was something... missing here that we didn't get.
Get your phone.
And we haven't...
bring your phone. Get it back at the end of the podcast.
I'm too popular.
Give me your phone.
I'm
kidding. Give me the phone.
You can have it back at the end of the semester.
Don't vibrate.
Dr. Phil, Keith tried to contact you. We haven't heard from you.
I responded.
For some reason, the body of your email is blank, so we don't know what you wanted.
Or what you had to say.
But I'm sure it was insightful.
I'm sure it was. Wait a minute. Maybe he started this and then ran off the road.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That would explain why I haven't heard back from him.
Please don't text us and drive. Feedback will wait. We'll still be there. I know we've announced the feedback special, but wait till you get home. Unless you commute. If you're on a train, then feel free to ramble, because I'm sure your neighbors would love...
Or subway.
I'm sure they want to hear from you.
I'm sure they would, especially if it was audio feedback, because I'm sure they'd love to hear.
Our real next bit of feedback is from...
Michelle.
All right. Michelle says, hey, guys. Sorry I haven't written in a while, and sorry I missed Friday Night Who, but I was tired and slept through it. I also wanted to let you know that I might miss the next one because, A, my DVD might not arrive in time, and B... I am getting up early to go to a Doctor Who convention that is just starting up in Toronto. Here's a link for you to put in your show notes, and which I will do. That's all for now. I'll write more next time. I send feedback, and we'll hopefully be soon. Michelle. And Michelle, we want to hear all about that convention in Toronto.
Yes, definitely. It is called Regeneration, Canada's newest Doctor Who festival. It's being held November 17th. At the Best Western Primrose Hotel in Toronto, Ontario. That's Canada, for those of you that don't live there. Who is the...
Colin Spall.
What? Who's Colin Spall?
Hold on, I'm looking.
He
was Lilt in Revelation of the Doctors. Of the Daleks.
Revelation of the Doctors? I was going, wow, a Doctor who I haven't seen!
Or heard of!
He was also Mr. Crane in Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel. He was the...
Oh, yeah, he's the one that's going to be at Chicago TARDIS also. James Moran.
He's been in a couple of Big Finish audios, according to their website. They've also got James Moran, who was the writer of Fires of Pompeii, Torchwood, a couple episodes. And some short stories. You know James Moran. You should follow him on Twitter if you're not.
Teddy Wilson began his career with You Can't Do That on Television.
What?
Yeah.
Who was it?
Teddy Wilson.
Teddy Wilson. I do remember a Teddy from You Can't Do That on Television.
Graham Burke and Robert Smith, authors of Who is the Doctor?
Did anybody else watch You Can't Do That on Television besides me?
Dude, every single day.
Yeah, after school, after come home, school. Sit down, Nickelodeon. Of course, we didn't have it when they had it in Canada, which was probably a little earlier than us. But
it looks like
Nickelodeon.
Yeah, it looks like he's.
I think we did.
I've seen the ones with Alanis Morissette.
Oh yes,
I know
Alanis, Alistair, Michelle, Moose.
Moose.
We used to call her Moose. I heard she had another name too, but. And then the two guys that played every adult guy in the skits.
Yeah,
every one of them.
Ever. So yes, definitely send us some information, some feedback, and share your pictures, and we'd love to see all of that from a WhoCon in Canada.
Looking forward to it.
Yes.
And there's no obligation to join us for Friday Night Who. Don't feel like you have to. I mean, it's fun. We always love to hear from you. But.
And our next bit of feedback
comes from Brittany. Hello, boys. It's been a while since I've sent in an email.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. I still never got that one in mind.
Wait a minute. Let's do Holly's first, because Brittany talks about Doctor Who. Well, she talks about ambassadors, though. Go ahead. You're fine.
Holly discusses more ambassadors than Brittany.
You didn't have me write Holly's down, by the way. So.
Oh, I thought I did.
Nope.
Are you sure?
That's okay. Go ahead. Holly does talk about ambassadors, so yeah, we'll do Holly's last.
Hello, boys. It's been a while since I sent an email, so I thought it was time to send another. I have a few things I want to write about, so here I go. First, the Ambassadors of Death. I thought this story was meh. I didn't hate it, yet I didn't really like it either. I did enjoy the Third Doctor, Liz Shaw, the Brigadier, Benton, even though he was barely in it. The story itself, I thought, dragged in parts. I can't really think of anything to say about the story. I think I might have to rewatch it again. Second, your Doctor Who photo challenge. I have to say, doing this is making me realize how little Doctor Who items I actually own. Luckily, Christmas is a little more than a month away.
Now you know what to ask for, Brittany.
If anybody wants to send me anything, my address is 76 Sodders Lane. My home may look small, but it's bigger on the inside. Joking aside, I really love the photo challenge. It's quite fun, and I love seeing everyone's ideas. Third, since you guys mentioned breakdancing in your last podcast, I expect to see some videos of breakdancing to Doctor music for your 100th anniversary. I kid.
Yeah, no,
I don't. I think we should do it.
I think Glenn should do it.
No, Glenn should do it.
I'm about 150 pounds heavier, than, if not more, than I was back then, and you don't want to see that. No.
It's a shame you don't have video of you back then breakdancing.
They didn't have video, much video back then. Their video cameras were thousands of dollars back then.
That's why he was breakdancing. He was trying to save up.
Trying to earn that money. Lastly, it may not be about Doctor Who, but a little tangent never hurt anyone. Glenn, thanks for your view of Wreck-It Ralph. I went to see it Tuesday night. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very nice story. I, like you, didn't see the twist, even though in hindsight it seemed a little obvious.
I think so too.
Mind blown over the twist.
I liked all the little and not so little nods to classic video games. I would definitely recommend this movie for people to go. Well, I guess that's all I have to say for now. Until next time, Brittany. P.S. Who? Who is but the form following the function of what? And what I am is the man in the mask. Now you have to talk about it. If you need a connection, there's a video game, the Gunpowder Plot.
That's right. We should have played that on Monday, too. We could have tweeted along as we played.
That would be hard.
That would have been really hard.
So that's my next object. I'm going to tweet while I play. I'm going into the tunnel now.
Anyway, Brittany, we did bring it up earlier. And yeah, Brittany's who joined us for our tweet along that night. Mm-hmm. And Brittany, again, thanks for joining us. It was a lot of fun.
And speaking of the Doctor Who photo challenge, we're really enjoying everyone's involvement.
We're on day 11.
Currently.
Day 12 now.
Day 12.
Yeah,
I've already sent out my day 12.
Yeah. You always send yours after midnight.
No,
you're always first.
Not always.
You're always first.
Not always.
Yeah. Most of the time, you're
first. Favorite monster is, day 12.
I'm having a problem with this one.
Why?
Because I don't know what to do.
What's your favorite monster?
Mine might come a little late. Well, I might not have my favorite monster. I may have to take another screen cap. Actually, it's not a screen cap. It's me taking a picture of a screen is what it'll be. But I don't know. I haven't. There's actually. I'm torn between three of my favorite monsters or so.
That's the problem I've had. Is some of these I've been so torn over what's my favorites that I can't decide.
You didn't consider this when we were coming up with a list. How difficult someone would be.
I love that one. I love that one too. Oh no.
So no, but it's been a lot of fun. We've had a lot of creativity. We've had a lot of people that have thought outside the box.
Yes.
I'm so glad that we have people that have, again, if you haven't started, go ahead and start. Play catch up or just start on day 12. Just start on day 13, whenever you want. We've had a lot of people, and again, you don't have to have an Instagram account. The three of us are doing Instagram. We have a few others doing Instagram. But we have some people that are just doing
Twit picks.
We've got people, is it?
Flickr?
Yeah. Who's doing theirs on their blog?
I haven't seen his in a couple days.
I think he's fallen behind.
Mark, isn't it?
No, not Mark.
Mark's doing Flickr.
Anyway,
That's Dan.
Dan's doing Flickr. Dan's doing Flickr. Yeah, so
Tina's doing Facebook.
Which is fantastic because, post them where you can because it's the challenge. It's just a matter of putting them up there, and we get a chance to see them because you're alerting us to them, and it's been a lot of fun. We've seen some very creative ones out there. It's just been a lot of fun to watch and see what you guys, what your taste in Doctor Who is, which I think is ultimately what I'm getting out of this. So,
and it's a lot of fun.
It is. Nice job, everybody. All right, a last bit of feedback comes from Holly.
And Holly writes, "Hey guys, in regards to Ambassadors of Death. This was an enjoyable story. Great to see the Brig again. This was my first Liz story, and I enjoyed her as a companion. The guy doing the telecast of what was happening reminded me a bit of James Lipton from Inside the Actor's Studio. Cool anti-theft device the Doctor had installed on Bessie. Toward the end of the story, I was glad the Brig was able to put together something was off and on to help the Liz and Doctor, even if he had to drive Bessie to get there. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this story. Holly from Wisconsin." And as always, thank you, Holly.
Yes.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about Ambassadors of Death now.
Something has gone seriously wrong with Mars Probe 7. With no contact from the astronauts since the rocket started its return journey from Mars, Space Control is now extremely worried about the fate of the crew. A rescue mission recovers something, but whatever it is, it certainly isn't human. To find out what has happened to the astronauts, the Doctor must head into space without the TARDIS!
Really? That's where that ends?
That's it!
It's kind of a review of the first four parts of the serial, I guess.
Well, not even...
Well, they want to give much away.
Five.
Five is when he actually starts to go up without a TARDIS.
Da-na-na. I give it some. I didn't hate it.
No.
It didn't warrant the horn.
No. And I think it doesn't warrant the praise it's given. Isn't this one highly praised?
No.
No?
No, this is... I think this is considered among many people to be a turkey. However...
Rightfully so.
It is one of Steven Stepanski's favorite episodes. He's one of the hosts over at Radio Free. Mm-hmm. Scarrow. He has high praise for this one, or at least enjoys it. It might be a guilty pleasure, but he has always held this one kind of up as one of his favorites. So that's where that comes from. But ultimately, no, I think this ends up being a stinker for most people.
I don't know if I'd call it a stinker, because there's a lot to enjoy in this story. It's just,
I would agree. I don't think it's a stinker.
It's not a stinker. Some of it falls flat. And it's some of, as does early Pertwee, suffers from being overly bloated.
Well, here's the problem. It's seven parts. I mean, just flat out. There's a lot that could be cut. Now, this was one of the ones, I don't remember which producing team of what was in charge of this one, but this is one of the stories that was in the pipeline for Patrick Troughton and Jamie and Zoe.
Mm.
And for whatever reason, it didn't get made with that particular team, and then obviously Troughton left and everybody went with him, and we've got this new production team in, so they reworked it to feature UNIT and all of the Earthbound stuff. And I commented in the first half that I was really surprised hearing that, because it's a very UNIT heavy episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, they feature in it a lot But then when we got to the end of it, I thought, well, maybe that's why it was reworked. Maybe this started off as like a 3 or 4 episode arc.
I could see it as a 4 episode arc.
And they crammed a lot more unit into it to take advantage of the fact that we've got, hey, we've got unit now. Let's do some of this.
Yes, I see where you're coming from, but don't undersell the fact that unit was existent and happened in Trouton's era as well. I mean, we had a lot of unit in Trouton's era as well. So
we had two.
We had the invasion for certain, and we had
the Yeti.
Yes, and well, it's not called the Yeti, but it's
Whatever the Yeti one.
Yeah,
because there were 2 Yeti episodes.
Well, there was another one with the Brigadier.
I don't think so.
It's not coming to mind now, but
at any rate.
Yeah, it's not coming to mind. But the unit existed. I think this was probably bulked up a bit. I think this was probably a outline or an idea for a story in Trouton's era. But I think that it ultimately came down to writing it for Pertwee's era. And then yes, I think maybe it got bloated. Here's the problem is we have Pertwee's first season has a lot of these. It has Doctor Who and the Solarians, which was 7 episodes.
Which was episode 2.
Which was a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
And even Spearhead from Space was 5, 4. Wasn't it? It was 4. No, it was only 4.
I just looked.
It was 4, 7, 7.
4.
No, because the other one for the first season is Inferno. And that's a
7. Oh, it is 7 as well. See, and that's what... I think they got into the... And because with the exception of a few here and there, we didn't get any really long, bloated stories beyond that first season. So I think maybe they kind of felt like they were writing themselves too heavy for one particular story. Yeah. But yeah, that's where this episode falls down, because really it's not a bad story. It's interesting. I like the concept. It's just dragged out way too long. And I think I like Doctor Who and the Silurians, don't get me wrong, but that was one of the things that one fell down for me as well.
Agree.
It was just way too long. And I have a feeling Inferno is going to be the same way when we see it.
I don't know. Inferno is one of... Now, I haven't seen Inferno.
I haven't seen all of it. I think I've seen all of it, but never all in one sitting.
Okay.
So,
and obviously Keith's never seen it.
Yeah.
Obviously. But that is one of those that's always heaped praise upon by the fans.
Yes,
now,
it is.
We've established that we're kind of the anti-culture in some ways to that, because we didn't like Talons and, you know, some of the other ones that...
But some we do fall in line with, so...
But some of them we do fall in line with. I mean, we're not completely...
Out there,
yeah. But I'm curious to see Invasion for obvious reasons.
Inferno, you mean?
Or Inferno. But yeah, this one, I
really, I think when it comes to Doctor Who and classic Doctor Who, there's never really a need for 7 parts. I think it always feels bloated and unnecessary. I can't think of a single story that I thought, oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Silurians comes close.
It comes close, but there was still some filler that we could have gotten away with.
And I think Invasion of Time.
Well, that was 6, but
Invasion of Time is 6, and was done in such a way that you really have 4 parts and 2 parts.
Yeah.
And so that is one of the ones that I feel like was done right, because it really had it shifts in the length of what it is. So I think that one works. And yeah, granted, it is not 7 parts, Keith, and I know that's what you're saying. But it's the one that comes closest to being...
That needs to be.
It's the closest one to being a long one, I think, really kind of was okay being a long story. But again, because it takes that shift after the 4th one and between 4 and 5, you know, it certainly works. Let's talk about the good points of Ambassadors, because there are good things.
The Invasion was 8, and I think that was one.
Was the Invasion 8? I didn't remember
being
8.
Is.
I thought it was 7 as well.
But the Brig's only in from 2 to 8.
What?
The Brig is only in from 2 to 8.
Of what?
An Invasion?
Yeah.
Because the first
the
part
Invasion.
The Invasion, the Trouton one, the second
one. Yes.
But I was just saying that's a longer one that we liked.
I still felt that was slightly bloated.
They
could have cut it down.
I specifically remember you both saying that was too long.
Maybe it was just because we crammed that one in.
I was the one that came down on the side that I thought that it was the right
maybe size. I just need to rewatch it then, because I think, if I remember correctly, we reviewed 3 or 4 different stories.
We did.
Oh,
we tried to determine that. Group 2,
we did Tomb
and we did...
one that you didn't finish, didn't we? No.
No.
No, no, no.
There was only one.
I think there were three Cyberman stories.
Was there three? Now that I think about it, I think we only did Tomb and Invasion.
I think we did Tomb, Invasion, and Earthshock.
Mm.
I'd have to go back and look.
Maybe
but
we did.
At any rate, maybe that's why, because I remember that was one
the
that
memory
I was,
cheats.
Yeah.
Even in our episodes.
Even in our episodes. I remember that was one that I was struggling to finish before deadline. I can tell you that. But. Now, there's a lot to like in this story. The first two episodes are phenomenal. I mean, you want to talk action by Havoc. There's gun battles galore. And I remember thinking to myself, where's Chrissy when you want to... Because she was complaining. What was the last one we did?
Talons.
That nothing was happening. And that there was, you know,
every episode, there was this great giant action scene.
Oh.
Which, huge. While it was entertaining, was part of what could have been cut to shorten the story.
No, I don't think you could have cut any of the action out of this.
I think,
in fact, I think that's what drives the.
That's what drives it.
Yeah.
I think what you need to cut is the sitting in the. While yes, we get some cute character moments with the doctor going, "How long am I going in here?" Well, which is 33 minutes. Oh, what you're saying is half an hour.
I don't think that would have cut enough. Yeah, that wouldn't have cut enough.
Well, but you didn't need any of the pad stuff, and you didn't need any of the. A lot of the space center.
Yeah, the countdowns, the preparation, the well, it took us forever to finally cut that capsule open when it returns to Earth, and we finally decide that we can't communicate with him inside. I'll tell you what, I would have been cutting that capsule open a lot sooner than that if they weren't responding. Because hey, as far as I'm concerned, they're dying. Yeah, we've got three dead astronauts in there, so. That was a little long. Really, where the longest of this is from episodes 2 to 4, to me. For me,
I would agree.
I didn't feel like it moved between 2 and 4. And
well, they talked about sending up the doctor in episode 2.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it took until episode 5 just to get him up
in
there.
In fact, the second, because we did this over 2 weeks for Friday Night Who, the second sitting. Now, granted, it was only 3 episodes as opposed to the 4 we did the week before. I felt moved along a lot quicker than the first 4 episodes that we watched.
I would agree. But that also could be said of any 7-parter. The last 3 are going to move quicker than the first 4.
That's true. Because, again,
1 and 2 were good. 3 and 4 just really in the middle
just,
there.
There's this dip, and it just, you know.
Now, we did get, I mean, the Liz escape. I mean, she gets captured and escapes during that bit. And that's, I mean, from a plot standpoint, do we need an escape and a recapture? No, you don't. You can always cut an escape and a recapture. But it was good to see Liz have something to do. And it was entertaining. I mean, she, you know, using her brain to get out of this mess as opposed to, you know, flirting with the guard and then clubbing him over the head with a silver serving tray or something. I mean.
Well, and that's where it works, because they start this out knowing they're going to have to do this 7-episode story. So they do feel like they throw enough in there. And that's where I think some of the action, maybe Keith's right, maybe some of the action could have been cut. But it feels like the action is what kept this, to me, I'm glad the action was there, because that's what kept the really boring episodes actually a little bit captivating.
So I'd agree with that.
I suppose maybe that it feels like they just kind of shoved the action in there so that we didn't feel bored with it. Maybe that's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, is that if it had been less episodes, there would have been a couple of action scenes that could have been cut. Given the length, the action helps keep you interested.
Although, as Blake pointed out, unit security really sucks.
Yeah.
I love the idea of these ambassadors that they've come down and then...
Honestly, I expected...
The other direction, that we went there first. Right. That we went on this Mars person. The
not expecting to...
insane general.
Oh, yeah. Into...
You know, winds up having trouble and comes back a space hero, but also comes back knowing that we have to defend ourselves from this menace from space. And obviously that's not it at all. But it towed the line for me, because it started off and he was just that character. He was just that obstinate, bureaucratic, we're not meant to like you, we get it, you're going to throw up an obstacle every chance you get to cause problems, you're probably in on it, oh hey look, you're in on it. I mean, there were no surprises in that. Until we got to the last part, and then it was kind of like, he kept going on about his moral duty, it was my moral duty to do this. And you began to realize that he's not just a villain, that he has been profoundly affected by what he experienced.
He's not just a villain, he's a victim.
And he's a victim.
Oh yeah.
That he, and when the brig, you know... retakes command from him and you know,
arrests him.
And kind of the, but it's all very proper, very military, very, you know, handing into the firearm and by the book and everything. And in some ways reflecting of what the Brig did when he did it, turned over his sidearm. Of course, the Brig's too cool for that. He has to go out and punch a guard in the face and then escape. But, you know, just the resignation on this guy's face that he did what he thought was right. And he asked the doctor, you understand that? Yes, yes, I do. I mean, it just, I really liked where they went with him at the end.
Yeah.
That built up a lot for me with that character. But I like the idea that these are ambassadors, that they're not scary monsters in astronaut suits.
I'm surprised they didn't do more after they unhelmeted the aliens. You see them once, and then that's it.
Yeah, it's all helmets beyond that. So.
I think they're scarier with the helmets on because of we don't know what it is. I almost wish they hadn't unmasked them at all.
Of course, there's a little bit of the...
Or unmask them and get that great reaction shot of somebody going... But we don't get to see what it is.
I think
that would have been cool, too. Because then once you see it in makeup, it's like, eh.
We also had the view of it from, at least I do, of Silence in the Library, Force of the Dead, where in that, there's nothing in there.
Yeah, the Vest Generata.
Yeah. Makes these astronauts even creepier, because it could be nothing, it could be something. We don't know.
Yeah.
Could be just energy in those suits.
I wish they'd come up with a different method for interfacing with them than a little remote control.
Mm-hmm. Well, they even said in the episode how primitive and how insufficient it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
As a Star Trek fan, you come back to Spock's brain. That's all I could think of at this moment. If you haven't seen it, the Enterprise is attacked, and they decide that Spock is the most intellectual person on the ship, and they literally steal his brain. And so Dr. McCoy rigs, with Scotty's help, rigs up a neuroimpulse 3-button remote control, and they put this little thing on, and they walk his body around with 3 buttons and a knob so that they can go down to the planet and retrieve his brain and then put it back in. Now, I'm a science fiction fanatic, but there are certain things that just begin to push the limits of what I'm willing to accept. And not only is Spock's brain a complete stinker, it is a turkey of an episode, but that's one of the fundamental things behind it. Is just, how are you going to reattach that? Nerves and thousands of... No!
But this is the 23rd century, so...
Yeah, and I didn't buy it then. So now we've got 1970, 1980, if we're generous, unit. And the scientist has come up with a 3-button remote control for...
It's just communication.
An alien life form that he can control and make them go out and kill people and rob banks and do whatever he's going to do to them. And it's like... The three buttons is what kills me.
And that's the point where the doctor is like... Really? You're communicating with that? The fact that the doctor calls it out and says how ridiculous it is makes me okay with it.
Well, it's not a hand link. It's not like a Quantum Leap hand link with lots of buttons and colors and flashing things. It's 3.
Or even a speaker or a microphone.
What are the commands that you programmed into this? Walk, climb in and out of the truck, kill something. That's pretty much got to be the range of what...
Wait, you left stop off of here?
Yeah, we don't need that one. They'll stop when they get to the back end of the truck.
You release the button for stop.
Oh, there you go. Genius. It's like
I'm sure
the old
radios. Think of that.
It's like the old radios that had 500 knobs and only 2 worked. On, off, and volume control. That was pretty much it. I mean, what do you do with this thing? We're controlling an alien life form. 3 buttons ought to do it. I understand that's nitpicky. I really do get that, but it's just...
Oh, it's
you're pushing so much against
and
the,
it features,
my daughter.
It features so much of the story. That's the problem.
Yeah.
My daughter wins this portable radio last year for something, for turning in enough something or other, maybe box tops or something. She wins this little portable radio. And this little portable radio, which probably is a buck at the dollar store... It has on and off, which is 1 button. It has volume, which is basically 1 button. You go around. So you go really, really loud, and it goes down. And then you go really, really loud, and it goes down. You just keep hitting it until you get the right volume. And the third button, it doesn't have a little dial to scan through the radio stations. It's one button scan. So you hit this, and every time it searches and finds a radio station, it's like, this is the cheapest little thing. And I think, we're in the 21st century, and you're still making radios that are primitive like this, that have three buttons, which is on and off, volume, which isn't even up and down volume, and scan which for the stations.
Two
That's
buttons.
What this device is.
That's exactly
that
what
it is. Right. Yes.
It's a radio. I can control men from Mars with a transistor radio. That's what this episode tells us. That's how great science is. And obviously, we have great science. We've sent people to Mars.
Did you get the impression they were from Mars, though? I got the impression that they weren't necessarily from Mars.
I got the impression that they were intercepted in space.
Yeah, and that was like an interceptive point. That's where they met them for
the first time. Well, they met them on Mars.
Yes.
But I don't think they're from Mars.
Yeah, okay.
But if they are from Mars, how much of that is a very busy planet.
I was going to say, how much of that is foresight of Sutek and then the waters of Mars and all of these?
Well, even before that, we had
Ice Warriors. Yeah,
Mars.
Ice Warriors. Even all of that, it's kind of, really? This too? Yeah, okay. They met on Mars.
Well, Mars is dead. I think it's the allure of Mars.
Well,
I think it's the allure of
Mars.
No, I mean, it's War of the Worlds. It's that invaders from... You don't have invaders from Venus. Why not? Because we know enough to know that Venus is pretty much poisonous and has been.
It's inhospitable. Yeah.
I would think Mars invaders from Venus would even be more scary.
Yeah, but Mars might have been. So there's that automatic imagination can latch onto that and go, ooh.
Well, and Mars is closer than Venus, isn't it?
Yes, and Mars is...
That's
not by much, but...
Well, that's the allure.
And Mars is the one planet that is close enough to Earth that we believe could be inhabitable. I mean, it's the... Of all of the other planets, Mars is the closest to Earth, and still being vastly different. Mars is the closest to Earth in the way that it could have possibly or could now be possibly inhabitable.
You got me curious now. I have to.
Well, it is closer. Venus is closer to the sun. It's on the other side of
it. Well, it's closer to the sun, but not closer to Earth.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars.
I'm talking distance to
distance
Earth.
Distance to Earth. I think Mars is closer
than
Venus is. Yes.
I think you're wrong, but I'll see if I can find that.
Okay, you Google search it.
I'll Google search that.
Saturn, Jupiter.
Jupiter, Saturn.
Oh, it is Jupiter, Saturn.
Asteroid
yeah,
belt.
You're right. Jupiter, there is an Saturn. Asteroid belt in there. Jupiter, Saturn. Neptune?
Uranus, Neptune.
And then Pluto. One that's not a planet anymore?
Pluto is still a planet! The microplanet.
Pluto.
It's a planet. You know how I know this? The sun makers.
Spoilers. But other good parts of this, I think Liz was fantastic.
Liz was a lot.
This was the most enjoyable I've seen Liz. Granted, that's only two other stories, but...
Solarians, what was the other one?
Spearhead,
yeah. Okay.
There's four, her four stories.
Yeah.
Three of them I've seen now.
Inferno will be the last.
Then. Yeah.
Yep.
She is such a strong character in this.
In this one, she is. I never felt like she was a very strong character in Silurians. I didn't think she was that strong of a character in Spirit.
Yes.
In this one, I really feel like she was coming into her own. She was really becoming a, to me, a favorable companion.
I think
really
a large part of that is the fact that she's separated from the Doctor for so long.
And it's and that's where the time to be an anchor character.
Yeah, that's where the time, the length of this. Benefits Liz.
Oh, I suppose that's true. Yeah.
Where if it were shorter, she might not have those great moments and that great bullheadedness to her that she does.
Yeah.
And then her convincing that other scientist to try to escape. And
unfortunately, that's even though I enjoyed Liz in those parts, those were some of the scenes that I thought could have been trimmed.
That unfortunately, that is the point of that's what's trimmable, but it builds to her character.
Builds on her, yeah, it certainly does.
Venus is 0.72 AU from the sun. Astronomical unit is obviously distance from the sun to Earth. So 0.72 for Venus, 1.5 for Mars.
Oh, so
strictly speaking, it is...
No, wait.
0.03 AU closer to go to Venus.
Venus, yes.
Mm-hmm. But okay. Not by much.
Yes. Okay, I got it.
In space terms, it's a tad.
Right.
Venus, because of its atmosphere, its cloud atmosphere, and proximity to the sun, and Mars, its proximity to the sun, and its right. less hospitable.
Runaway
less,
greenhouse effect less, versus...
not hospitable, more hospitable atmosphere.
Less hostile.
Less hostile, that's what I was looking for.
Well, lack of...
Well, there is very little atmosphere, but there, it's not as hostile as some of the other planets, so that's why I say
because Venus is pretty much, well, if you can get down past the pressure and you don't get burned by the acid rain,
you could survive
and landed on the surface and then took your helmet off. It would be like carbon really, dioxide poisoning. Well,
there's really not even a surface to Venus. I mean, isn't it an entirely liquid surface as well?
Oh, wait, I thought it was Mercury.
No, Mercury's not liquid. It's Mercury is all solid.
Four inner planets are all still cores. But I think Mercury. They found that there are gigantic pools of it that are just.
Oh, I thought it was Venus. That molten. Was like.
Venus.
Yeah. Right.
Of course, they also found liquid. It's frozen, but liquid pools of hydrogen on Titan.
Yes. Out orbiting
Saturn. Oh, yeah.
Isn't this just a fun, fascinating
science?
Oh, we're talking. That's really good. That was very Thomas Dolby.
Thank you. Let's talk Higgs boson some more. Also, because I looked it up, yes, our Cybermen archive, all the way back in episode 16, was Tomb of the Cybermen, the Invasion, and Earth Shock. So I think maybe that's why.
You know what else is awesome?
Which were stealthy.
About this story that Holly brought up? Bessie.
Yeah.
Oh, Bessie was so cool.
A lot of Bessie featured in this. And the fact that they...
The security.
Okay, so...
Can you guys help me push this out of the way? Sure. As soon as they touch it. We can't move!
Let's talk unit security from start to finish on this one. Okay, so we've got the capsule. We're going to wheel it back to base. We've got a convoy. And we're foiled in our attempts to get to the capsule. We're ambushed because of two guys in a helicopter with some smoke grenades. And we lose...
Wait, let's emphasize...
The truck.
Smoke grenades.
Smoke yes. grenades, not real grenades, just smoke grenades. And what did we lose? Did we lose the vehicles? Did we lose the Humvee? Did we lose the guy with the machine gun? No, we lost the truck.
The biggest vehicle
the
on the road.
Bed that had the thing on it we were with supposed to be guarding.
The capsule.
Yes. So then the doctor, in his infinite abilities to...
Thank goodness he had a little bit of issue with turning Betsy around, because if he hadn't been...
he did
I'll catch up with you.
He did seem to be having issues driving this episode. But yeah. So he parks Betsy on the side of the road in front of the truck and says, oh, I can't get it. Can you help me? And I need a push. And playing the doddering old man, and then activates the anti-theft device. They're stuck to the car. And he hops in the truck and drives it back. It was just,
I love when the brig comes and says, "We recovered your car. We found Bessie out in the field." And he goes, "Were there two agitated men stuck to it still? Two very agitated men stuck to it?"
No. Oh, I'll have to adjust the length of that force field or power or something.
That's what he said. Force field. We'll have to adjust the.
But the brig giving his, he's very, I'm agitated, and we're calling out the National Guard, and we're going to do this, and I've got calls into this, and the doctor walks in and kind of tosses the keys. I found the truck. There you go.
That had to be one of my favorite moments. And then,
yeah, it was so fun.
And the doctor, Pertwee, constantly reminds me of why I enjoy Pertwee so much as the doctor.
It's... You know, it's funny, because I read a quote, I don't remember now who it was from. Oh, it was Christopher Eccleston, when he was talking about looking at each of the doctors in their first seasons, kind of finding their footing
yeah.
as to how they should play it. And they're, with the exception of Tom and his words. And I really think Pertwee is also kind of an exception to that rule. Because you look at the episodes in his first season that we've reviewed. You look at Spearhead.
In comparison to the rest, it's like, why don't you do Venusian Aikido? Like, there's so much of that stuff that it's like...
There's little things that they
have. We didn't have that yet.
But that's just it. I don't think that's necessarily a fault of him figuring out how to play the
character. No, it's
I think
the
that's very much they just haven't written that in yet. He didn't have that as a tool in the toolbox. The only thing that's really different about Pertwee's first season from later is the hair.
Yeah.
Which is distracting.
It's slightly less curly. It's more flat.
Yeah. It's,
and his doctor is, despite the writing, more consistent than anybody else's, I think.
Yeah, in a way I could see that.
At least in classic.
Yeah. He's very...
He's always the third doctor.
Well, he's always got his priority list shown up. Whenever we're dealing with aliens, first on the list is, can we communicate with them and talk to them, and is this going to end peacefully? And if we have to cross that one off, then it's number two, which is, okay, how do I get out of this with injuring the least amount of people? Can I convince them to go away? That's still involves talking to them. Okay, and now I'm going to have to build the ray gun.
And then kill them, yes.
But not, with other doctors, you don't necessarily get that progression. But Pertwee, from day one, he has always been Pertwee. And that's something I think very much... He doesn't have a lot of flightiness in his first season. He's consistently there.
And I think through all of his run, there's not that flightiness either.
Yeah. No, never flightiness, but he doesn't have... Beyond his first season, I don't think he has the, like he was saying, the steps of consistency. The character changes a bit. He still stays true to the character, but he doesn't have those. I don't think he has those 3, 4, 5 point consistencies later on.
You don't think so?
No, I think he changes. I think his character changes a bit, especially when you get to the Peladon adventures, where he's not quite. I mean, he's even being duped by the situation most of the time. Monster, especially, not necessarily.
I could see that. It seems, but it almost seems more like he's so focused on getting the TARDIS to work that he's ignoring everything else.
Well, I think that comes.
And then he accidentally lands in this place.
Second season. I think it's like everything's kind of secondary to what he's trying to do, and that's get off of Earth. But
I don't know.
I think it's still there. I think that
he still has the steps, just not as many.
No, I still think, because even when he's thrown in the pit with Agador, he's backing up.
He sings it.
He's mentally going, can I communicate with you? Okay, next.
Well, I mean, maybe not as poignant as in that first series, in that first season.
Yeah, well, the first season, too, we very much get more in the vein of, I mean, you look at the aliens. We've got the Nestian consciousness. We've got the Silurians, and then we've got the ambassadors. So, he's really given these things to attempt to communicate with.
It's very formulaic.
But even later... Dinosaurs. He's still trying to, not necessarily talk to, but he doesn't treat them as mindless.
Well, maybe more so than the Earth-based stories, where you have the human influence, where you have the humanity of it, where they don't quite approach things the same way the Doctor does. But it seems like every time we're removed from the Earth stories, the Doctor doesn't quite have the same... I'm going to call it elitism, and I only say that because it's almost like he's on a different plane with understanding the species than humans are. But when you get him away from that element, I just don't see that, like Carnival of Monsters, I don't see that same process, that same point process. The same thing with the Peladon stories. I don't see that same rationalization process. I mean, he almost falls into the same... It's like where he goes somewhere where there's... I don't want to say equals, but where there's not that human element of we've just, fight or flight type thing. Whereas he always steps in and says, well, we're going to evaluate this situation. I don't see that as much in the off-Earth stories. There's still glimmers of it, but I don't.
I guess it's not as poignant.
It's not as poignant when he's on the Earth-based
Frontier,
stories.
I think he's very much... in that.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. That's a good point. Now that you point that one out, though, he is still in that sort of element.
What's the other Dalek one that we did?
Planet. Death. Day.
Day.
I'll just go through
which one's not Sarah Jane?
The one that's not Sarah Jane
that's
is
not
Planet.
The sequel
and
to Frontier.
Death. No.
Sarah Jane's Death.
Day, then.
So it's got to be Day.
Yeah.
Day of the Daleks, I think, is...
You asking the guy that gets confused all the time.
That one, I think, he's still very much in...
Again, Earth-based that story, though.
Well, yeah, back to Earth. You're right. We're back on Earth, that one. So, I don't know.
Part of me almost feels like the reason he has less of a moral ground or more problems outer space is that because of his isolation on Earth, that's why. Or that... the Time Lords obviously took something from him. He doesn't know how to operate the Detroit. Well, aside from his freedom, he doesn't know how to fix things, and he's struggling with trying to figure out how to fix the TARDIS, how to get off Earth. And it seems like there's part of his memory that's been removed, which they reference the fact that part of his memory is gone.
Well, the part...
The TARDIS, but what if, what if the Time Lords took more than just the TARDIS on accident?
Well, that's speculation, though.
That's speculation, but that's kind of how I rationalized the two differences.
All right.
It helps you sleep at night.
The Third Doctor is different when he travels as opposed to on Earth. Yeah. I mean, it's
okay.
Well, he's not as grumpy.
Well, yeah, bringing that's
it back
true.
Around here to ambassadors. Or anything else that you guys
I
con about?
I appreciate the fact. I thought. I mean, we can talk a little bit about the colorization efforts.
Oh yeah, we should talk about this.
We should talk about the fact that we started this, and I went, "Wow, the colorization
this is amazing."
The first episode, I was like, "They did a great job on this. This looks fantastic." Then I went, "Wait a minute!" And I went to Wiki and found out that. Episode 1 was the only one they didn't have to recolorize, but that was the actual colorization. And it wasn't until episode two came up and I went, yeah, that looks like colorization.
Although, to be fair, 5, 6, and 7, Blake didn't know it was colorized.
Yeah, he came into it late and didn't realize it was colorized.
And he didn't know. And
now, granted, the process that they used was color restoration, not colorization.
That's true, yes.
It wasn't creating your own palette. And adding color to basically painting a black and white picture. It was using the process of reapplying the color to the scenes that they knew, first of all, the correct palettes for. They just didn't have it within the film. So that being said, it was a decent colorization. It didn't take me out of the story at any time. And yeah. In fact, after you get used to it, you tend to forget that it's a colorized episode.
It's only that 3, 4, or even 5,
change
1, 7,
2. Yeah. But once you watch 2 episodes in a row that have been recolorized, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's just...
It just seems like it's a...
It just seems like that's... It's like a slightly washed out 70s film print.
Yeah. So I'm all for recolorizing. I don't think I want to see them still go back and colorize.
But man, you were so jazzed over episode 1. I bet it was
a little sad.
I could have hooked you on the idea.
You
but
could
I said,
have.
If they could have made the Hartnell ones look like this, you'd have been like, yeah.
I really considered when I was like, wow, if colorization has come this far, okay, maybe it is time to go back and look at the Hartnell and Troughton ones. And it wasn't until I went, oh wait, this one wasn't recolorized, that I went, well, of course.
Do you think it would make a
difference?
Like
the flea circus.
Well, no offense to what they were able to accomplish, because I'm thrilled with the fact that it was in color.
By 5, 6, and 7, I forgot it was in color
especially
until
since
we
referenced it. did Invasion of the Dinosaurs, and we understood that there was a colorized version of the first one because that one was missing in color, and they did recolorize it, but unfortunately when you sat down and start the DVD, in the way that it's presented, it gives you the black and white episode first. So you don't see the color unless you go through and watch the special colorized
version. Because it's a special
feature
on it. So, would it make a difference if it was a Hollywood budget? I mean, if it was a bigger studio behind it, do you think? I haven't seen anything colorized in a while, quite honestly.
I think that, well,
I think that the
because
the
Turner
kind of
got so much flack for it, I think that a lot of people shied away from it. We've never improved the technique because of that. We've just stayed away from it. So I would agree. I haven't seen anything colorized for a long time. I don't know. Because nobody's getting behind it with big budget dollars, it's hard to say. It's hard to say whether it's better now or not. And I think Big Finish did a fine job of restoring the color to it. I was not...
You mean To Entertain?
What did I say?
Big Finish.
I'm sorry. To Entertain. Yeah. He's over there going, what the heck did you just say? And I thought, what did I just say?
Big Finish colorizes?
To Entertain did such a fantastic job on this one for what they had.
Yeah.
That, again, that it was just noticeable when it happened. But then for me to get used to it and really forget that it was colorized, then...
I think that's the biggest point of colorization, yeah. is you forget
yeah.
that it is.
But again, I think because you're talking about an episode that was shot in color and lit and costumed that way, when you restore color to it, I'm fine with it. But when you're shooting something in black and white, and costumes and lighting are done in such a way to complement black and white, when you colorize something like this, you've destroyed the artistic integrity of something. And that's where I come down on. Even with old episodes from Troughton and Hartnell's years.
Those two should be black and white.
I don't want to see those colorized for that mere fact.
See, I'm still curious.
For the same reason I don't want to see Casablanca in color. And I can't see a dang Shirley Temple movie now without seeing the colorized versions, because that's all that exists anymore. I mean, I'm sure the black and whites do somewhere, but you don't see those.
I would watch, as a bonus feature, the colorization of Hartnell. Or
I'm not opposed to them doing that as long as I have the original.
Yes.
Don't pull a Star Wars and give us the special edition only
and
not the original. But at the very least, give us the colorized version.
Which 2 Entertainment has done a good job of doing. How many of these special editions have we watched that we could have seen special effects
and we've always and watched, new edition? And we've always and watched
we've, the way we've still gotten the option of. So I think if 2 Entertainment went back to colorize at first or second Doctor story, they would still include the original.
Yes, and I don't see that. Depending on who you are, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't see that happening because it is quite an endeavor for
it's so expensive
that they've only done it twice, and once was just they've done it 3 times technically, and once was just for 2 particular stories. That just were missing 1 episode. This was their biggest endeavor by doing 6 of 7 episodes.
And the most recent endeavor.
And this was really the only one that was, the most necessary because the bulk of it was black and white. Yeah. So
It's
for the same reason
challenge.
They are very selective on what ones they animate because it costs them a lot of money to do so.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example.
Rightfully so.
I'm a big fan of Holiday Inn, the Fred Astaire Bing Crosby movie. I've watched this thing since I was a kid, and I love it. It's just, that's one of those, every year, I gotta watch Holiday Inn. And it is in black and white. And I have no problem with that. But I've always wondered, if you've not seen it, it's a wonderful story, but the guy opens an inn that's only open on holidays. So there's all these song and dance numbers that happen to take place on Lincoln's birthday and President's Day and Valentine's Day and 4th of July. And, you know, so when you do all this, and there's these great song and dance numbers, and they've got the stage, and you can tell there's this gigantic American flag curtain behind Fred Astaire, and he's dancing and throwing fireworks at the, you know, poppers at the ground, and things are exploding and stuff. It's just one of those movies that I've always wondered, what would that look like in color? I'm fascinated by that. Well, they did. They released a color version, and it was part of a set where they gave me the original black and white and the soundtrack. And the colorized version. I was like, sweet, that's it. I buy my 3-disc edition, I'm done. And I got it home, and I popped it in, and I was so excited. And it taken the traditional colorization route. Everything is done in shades of gray. Everything's black or brown or that weird kind of dark blue color that's not really a blue. And the dress that, I can't think of the actress's name now, they do the Valentine's Day dance. And in my head, because it's a gorgeous gown, but it's red. In my head, it's red.
Is that Hedy Lamarr?
I don't think it's Hedy Lamarr. No, it's not Hedy Lamarr. She's blonde, but I can't think of her name now. But whatever it is, it's Valentine's Day. You know, it's a red velvet gown with gauze sleeves, and in my head, it's beautiful, and it's black. In the colorized version, which that's probably I'm assuming they did the research, and that's probably the actual color of the dress
because that fits best in the black and white.
Exactly, because that's what color it would have been to light that scene.
Virginia Dale?
I don't think it's Virginia Dale. It's the other one
either. Yeah.
Well, Marjorie Reynolds.
It is Marjorie Reynolds. Yeah.
Like we know, you know, we're so excited. But Wiki, that's one of those examples you know, in my head it plays out so much better than what I was actually presented with. And was this because this was somebody's artistic decision?
I mean, if I had been the artistic director on this, I'd have made it red, but then that's shattered somebody else's illusions of what? That's not a red dress. I mean, so you run that risk. There are still things that I would love to see in Doctor Who. I mean, imagine walking into Trotter's Lane in color in an unearthly child. I get goosebumps at the idea of that. Do I want it? Yes or no. There's a part of me that if they were to do it, as long as they gave us both versions, I'd be okay with it. Even if it was this quality, I'd be okay with it, because it opens that imagination doorway just a little bit wider, and I can kind of play in the sandbox a bit. But not to I think it's prohibitively expensive that it'll never happen.
This won't lend any more, except for just a quick anecdotal story about colorization for me. I bought the two-disc edition of Disney's Shaggy Dog and Shaggy D.A. They're both, actually, I think it's two discs in one, but it's two separate discs. And the Shaggy D.A. is one disc, and the Shaggy Dog is another disc. Well, obviously, the Shaggy Dog was, or D.A. was in color, but the Shaggy Dog was in black and white originally.
Right.
Not realizing that they had done a colorized version of this. I never had ever seen it. I probably knew years ago, but stayed away from it because I hate colorization. And so I stuck my disc in, and I went to the bathroom, and I came back. And I don't know if you know, some of the Disney DVDs will automatically start on their own if you're on the menu for so long.
Autoplay.
My neighbor and Netta did that.
I came out.
Warner does it automatically.
And I sat down.
Playthroughs of the menu.
It didn't even go to the menu.
Really?
For the Blu-ray.
Must be a Blu-ray thing. Sorry, come on.
Okay. I'll wait until you're done. You're going to interrupt me? I'll wait until you're done. So I sit down,
a grumpy
and I look, and I go, I don't remember this being color, because the first part is that animated kind of stop-motion animation dog in the credits, in the credit title,
right? Yeah,
where it's, you know, barking and doing, and it's really horribly done for a Disney movie, and for a company that does animation, and it's, but anyway, so I'm watching, I don't remember this being in color, what's going on here, because it's been a few years since I've seen it, and of course, from the get-go, the first shot, I realized, when they actually get into the film, I go, oh, this is colorized. And I thought, oh, well, I guess what you'd get for a $6 disc from Walmart. So I'm watching and I'm watching, and literally I got like 5 minutes. I love the Shaggy Dog. You guys don't understand. This is one of my favorite Disney movies. Love it. I was 5 minutes into this thing, and I was so disgusted with the colorization on this that I turned it off. I was like, forget it. I can't watch this. And, of course, as I'm hitting stop, it goes back to the menu, and I hadn't seen the menu yet. I realized that there's colorized version, which is first, and then the original black and white, which is second. And I'm thinking, they must have done this up and pushed it and thought this was a great idea and people would love it. It's horrid looking. It's terrible. It's the, you know, the teeth are still gray because they haven't done anything with the teeth the eyes, you know. I mean, so luckily, I saw that
there's still the black and white.
And thank you, Disney, for keeping the black and white on the disc. And so I watched that and ended up watching that the rest of the night. But I was so disgusted with the colorization of that one that I just almost, like, it almost ruined one of my favorite Disney films.
Well, there's so many examples from the early days where, you know, somebody will walk across screen and the color palette will struggle to catch up.
Absolutely.
If you're going to do it right.
There's a lot of those Shirley Temple films that do that.
Shirley Temple's really, the color hues.
Yes,
I don't remember Shirley Temple ever color.
They colorized them. They colorized
I never saw them
in the early 1990s. It was one of the the big pushes when Turner was colorizing all that stuff.
It was right after he bought the catalog, because he bought MGM's.
And that was
MGM, but they didn't have the money to keep it. So he kept the film rights and sold off everything else.
That was one of the first strings of films that they colorized. And you still see those advertised to this day.
I must
and
never
it's
watch
still the colorization ones. Like, they have completely
destroyed. Not that I'm a huge Shirley Temple fan.
I must never watch the Shirley Temple films after 1990.
There are a few good Shirley Temple films, don't get me wrong. There really are. There's a couple of them that I like.
What's the candy
Heidi's
one?
Heidi's great.
Heidi? I remember Heidi.
Heidi's great.
What's the candy one?
It's the one where she's the orphan. I can't remember what the name of it is. Little Princess.
Yeah. No. Yes?
Littlest Princess.
I remember the songs, maybe more than the video or the title.
Well, Littlest Princess. He said candy, but I was thinking animal crackers in my soup. Monkeys and
that's not the one I'm thinking of.
That's I can't remember what the candy was.
Like a Candyland song?
You think of Babes in Toyland?
No.
Because
she wasn't in
that. I know it's not Shirley Temple.
Anyway, we've strayed.
Regardless, tangent.
Sound Bastards of Death is Not the best one out of the box.
But it's not horrid.
It's not horrid.
Yeah.
And the colorization, I think, is decent.
And it's, yeah, the colorization is not bad.
And LeShaw's hot.
The recolorization is not bad.
The recolorization.
What'd you say?
LeShaw's hot.
Did you think she's hot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and her short skirt?
Too much like our meteorologist. I just...
I don't work with your meteorologist.
Anyway, so what's coming
she's
up?
She's no longer.
Bring her to the.
That's true. She's not. Yeah.
Bring her to your next party, and I'll let you know.
Yeah. What's coming up on the schedule, Sean?
Next week on the schedule, back to William Hartnell in the black and white era with the Web Planet, and then show number 99. You've got a little bit of homework to do. We've got Web Planet, which we'll be reading along with Big Finish number 5, The Fearmonger,
which I've already listened to.
Good for you.
And not this time around. I still have to re-listen to it, but I have heard it.
You've heard it. It's been. I'm kind of on that cusp where it's been long enough since I listened to this one that I probably ought to go back and refresh.
Which number is this?
I will
finish
back this
number
week,
5.
Oh,
it's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those that I will probably re-listen to it this week. But if I didn't get to it for some reason, I remember it well enough that I could review it next week. So.
And then the week after that will be our 100th anniversary, which we're doing a feedback show. So if you've got questions, comments. If you've been thinking
tangents.
About writing us and you just haven't yet, if you've got audio feedback, video feedback, something you want to include, by all means, send it our way, and we'll put it together. And even if it's, I hesitate to say, not Doctor Who related,
but that's never stopped us. We're not reviewing a story this
week.
We're
not reviewing a story.
It's all feedback, so if it's we don't get much, it's going to be a short episode.
I thought he was censoring himself. If it's
if it's short, we're
if
not
Cybermen.
Spoilers.
And then, because you asked, I mean, we will be doing Friday Night Who that week. We're doing Smith and Jones, but we've already reviewed that one. So,
is that what we decided on?
Yeah.
That's what he decided.
That's what I decided on.
You guys wouldn't give me an answer.
Because we never decided. You just said new series.
We did.
No.
Yeah.
We discussed it pre-show and never went back to it.
I thought we said something.
No? Oh. We said new series, and that was it.
I wish you'd have picked a better one than Smith and Jones.
I just decided I was in the mood for Martha Smith, so we're going to do Smith and
Isn't
Jones.
Isn't there a Martha two-story that we could do better?
Two-story?
Like two-parter?
Two-parter? The Santarin one's the only two-parter besides
well,
the finale.
Well,
no,
family.
She's also Family and Blood. And
oh, Family Blood. Why didn't we do that one?
Because I thought I might save that for Halloween.
Next year? All right. Well, he's thinking ahead, isn't he?
We're doing Smith and Jones.
He certainly is. It'll be a short Friday night.
What else we got going on?
The week after that, The Invisible Enemy.
Woo! I know what that means.
Will be our Friday Night Who for November 30th.
Is that the surprise? Is that what you were waiting to surprise us with?
Yeah. And then our show number 101 will be The Sarah Jane Adventures Season 3. So we're going to cover all of that in one long time as we've done before. So if you've been kind of holding off on the Sarah Janes, go ahead and start again. And
did we review K-9?
No.
We did K-9
so
and Company.
We're going to do that with, that's what
no,
I'm
no,
K-9
no, no,
company.
No, 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 no,
we did K-9 and Company.
We did do K-9 and Company because we put that with
because
our Sarah
Because that's on Invisible Enemy.
Right.
Okay, we haven't done a K-9
we haven't
proper
done a
K-9
archive.
I got you. I got you. Okay.
But the following week, we'll be doing The Sunmakers. See, I left a little hint on that. And then episode 102 will be a do you want to say it?
K-9 Archive!
K-9 Archive, just to make you happy. Because I promised him we'd get it in there.
Yay!
K-9!
And this is all real K-9, right?
No, this is all real K-9.
Not shot of K-9.
It's all John Leeson. And then I'll have the rest of the schedule posted up through Christmas. Not quite the end of the year, but it might as well be.
Almost.
On the website for anybody who's interested in maybe making some purchases to follow along on the Friday Night Who schedule or whatnot. So, I suppose I should throw the next one out there, too, just because it's books. The following week, December 14th, we will be doing The Pandorica Opens and The Big Bang for Friday Night Who, which, of course, we've already reviewed. The reason for that is because Glenn will be on holiday. He's going to Disney World.
Yay!
Yay!
Expecting more.
Were you waiting on me?
I was waiting on you.
Oh, sorry.
You're the one going.
I'm freakishly excited.
You've just celebrated your 100th podcast. What are you going to do now?
I'm going to Disney World.
Woo! He's freakishly excited over that, and so are we. We're freakishly excited to get rid of him.
Oh. Keith's and, not. He's going to have to do my job for a whole week.
So Keith and I will be doing book reviews.
That's
not that hard. Just be happy. We'll be doing... Or wait, no, you're the Noreen guy. He's the evening guy. You got to be depressed that week. Sorry.
He's yeah, too. I am going to have to literally do his job that week. That's true.
Whoops, where'd it go?
I thought you meant on the podcast.
No, I meant in real life.
It's true, in real life. I'm not going to see my wife for an entire week. Yeah, thanks, Glenn.
I was talking real world, too, not podcast world. But ooh, podcast world.
Ooh.
File that away.
Sean has another idea.
So Keith and I will be doing book reviews. Keith is reading
Touched by an Angel.
An angle?
An angle.
Touched by an angle.
Touched by an angle.
It's a touching story of a triangle and a square who get together.
Touched by an angel.
Resulting in a parallelogram. which is what, Jonathan Morris?
Hold on, let me go to the bookshelf.
I'm pretty sure I got that right. It's an 11th Doctor book. I will also be doing an 11th Doctor book, Apollo 18, by Justin Richards. So if you want to start reading ahead on those, you can join us for that.
You're both doing
it? We're 11th? Both doing 11th Doctor.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Because the library didn't have mine.
What were you looking for?
It is Jonathan Morris.
Oh, you're just...
something different.
Okay.
Just to mix it up, but...
Hey, but mine features Rory. Yours does not.
Sad face. Trade me.
No!
Wait. Touched by an Angel, what was yours?
Apollo 18.
Apollo 18.
Which I loaned him.
Which
I loaned him that one.
Oh, I thought you said you read that one.
I have.
You have read it. Okay.
That's how he knows Rory's been in it.
That was
spoilers.
That was the first Doctor Who book I ever read.
And he kept coming back, so it must not be...
Oh.
It must not be Story of Martha.
It's not Story of Martha. I'll give you that.
I think that's why I wanted to do Martha next week, or the following week for Who, is just because...
Get that bad taste out of our mouth.
I needed a Martha fix, and that one wasn't doing it for me. So there's that. But
Quasi already had
did
that.
Did I confuse all of you? I hope so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But next week,
it'll be on the website.
Fearmonger. And this will be on the website.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing you.
Been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.